The Screenless Switchers Podcast, Episode 30, for June 10th, 2009.
And welcome to another episode of the Screenless Switchers. It's probably, people are going to think this is a little weird, you know, two episodes in as many days. It's a kind of a record for us. I'm Darcy Bernard.
I'm Holly Anderson.
What?
It is a record for us.
Yeah. And we're actually joined by the same panel we had yesterday. First we have Josh DeLine Court. Welcome back, Josh.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And we've got Steve Sausen. Hey, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for having me. And the truth is, we just haven't hung up yet. It's only
yeah.
been
yeah.
Yeah. 20 hours.
We just kept talking. We just decided to hit record again. And finally, we have Kara Quinn. Hey, welcome back.
Hey, it's like deja vu. All over again.
All right. Well, we are here. Not quite as much fun as yesterday's, talking about the iPhone. We are talking about an article that I guess is going to be, or it is, in this month's Braille Monitor. Is that correct? The
yep.
NFB's, that's their monthly magazine newsletter deal. Okay. All right.
I think so. Just posted, so.
Yeah. It said June 2009, the Braille Monitor. So, there was an article about VoiceOver. And, well, it's inaccurate at best. And we thought we'd go through it and, you know, comment on it piece by piece and kind of take it apart, see where there's issues. So, we'll start doing that.
Report on the ease of access of the Apple OS 10.5 Leopard environment with VoiceOver by Wesley Majerus.
Okay, I guess it's not really much commenting on there. But that's, hopefully the voice is suitable for everyone. If you're not comfortable with Alex, we've got it at a pretty slow speed. But here's, I believe, the first thing we're going to hear is the from the editor, like a comment from the editor before the actual article starts.
From the editor, almost as long as computers have dominated the lives of many Americans, some people have praised the Apple products with a fervor, verging on the religious. The operating system has always been more visually intuitive than that of the PC, and manipulating graphics on Apple products is apparently both easy and satisfying. But since the Apple II in the early days, which seems to have incorporated some speech access, Apple products have been remarkably inaccessible to blind users. Now, for the first time, the Apple Macintosh operating system has been equipped with VoiceOver, which provides more speech access than blind people have ever had on Apple products. But how good is it? How efficient is the speech? Does the blind user have access to every computer function? International Braille and Technology Center Access Technology Specialist Wesley Majerus set out to put the Mac and VoiceOver through their paces. Here is his report.
All right, so first, kind of an interesting... Apparently the only reason people use the Mac is because it's graphically... It's nice to use graphically, apparently. That's kind of what I got from that.
Well, it's either that or, you know, religious zeal.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's the Mac cabal idea again.
Exactly.
I would agree with most of it, except that I think it's a shame that they totally discredit the work that was done in the past with the Apple IIe. There was a lot of speech access, because Apple did it, but because Apple and a lot of other third-party vendors collaborated and made speech access happen. It didn't seem to have some speech. It had a lot of speech because a lot of people worked really hard to make that happen.
Yeah, that was the first platform for a lot of people. A lot of people started it with the Apple II. And also, the comment...
They don't even go into Outspoken.
Yeah, the comment that there hasn't been any access since then is ridiculous because people have used Outspoken.
Yeah, in fact, Outspoken was my first exposure to a GUI interface in the early 90s, before I started using Windows.
Yeah.
Well, I believe, and if I'm wrong, I'm sure someone will correct me, but I believe that the Outspoken for the Mac was actually around before any Windows screen readers. Like, I think they were the first GUI screen reader.
I think that's right. I mean, I started using Outspoken for Mac, I think, in 92?
Uh-huh.
Maybe 91 or 92.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know about JAWS or have any exposure to JAWS until, I think, 94 or 95.
Right.
I'm not saying that was the first JAWS. JAWS had been around for a little while by then, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's very, very strange. Clearly, you know, this editor was not doing any sort of even just nominal research. I mean, this is nothing, you know, buried in the vaults of, you know, visually impaired history. This is mm-hmm. stuff that I think is pretty common knowledge and can be found on Wikipedia and probably lots of other sources.
Right. Well, going back to what Steve said, I'm sure if you asked any blind person who's been using computers for, you know, 15, 20 years, they know about the Apple II. They probably used it, you know?
Absolutely. I still have mine.
Oh, really?
Still works.
Oh, cool. I went broke a long time ago. I wish I still had it, though. But
what about the comment for the first time, Mac?
Yeah, what's the deal there? I mean, VoiceOver's been around for 3 years.
Four years.
4 years, yeah. 3 years since Holly and I got it. But yeah, four years. Why for the first time?
Well, it just sounds like slamming. I mean, it really does. To be honest, it just sounds either they're they cannot be that late to the party.
Yeah, when Holly and I were talking about it earlier, she was like, is this an old article or something? Because it had that feel, you know?
Yeah.
Just like, but
even Leopard has been out for almost 2 years now.
Yeah, right. So I don't know what
year and a half.
That's all about. All right, well, let's move on to the first section of the article itself. And I've divided these into several small chunks, so we'll go through each one and kind of talk about it.
Apple's Macintosh computer is one of the only systems to have integrated, full-function screen access software. Because it is a part of the operating system, it is usable, out of the box, and on the showroom floor. You can simply walk up to any Macintosh computer running OS 10.5 Leopard and press Command-CMD-F5 to try out the screen access software. In this article, I outline some of my impressions of VoiceOver after the week-long evaluation I recently undertook. Throughout this document, reference will be made to VO keys or to pressing VO with other keys. These references are to the VoiceOver keys, which are Control plus Option, and are held down in conjunction with other keyboard keys to perform tasks specific to the VoiceOver screen access software. As I undertook the evaluation of VoiceOver's usability, I identified several important tasks and uses for the Macintosh. These included sending and receiving email, browsing the web, downloading files, and file management, including moving and deleting files. I also wanted to know whether a user having difficulties could get help from the Mac OS X help utility. Because creating and editing documents is a central reason to use a computer, I evaluated the TextEdit word processing application. In this article, these tasks will be presented in order of popularity. People are most likely to use their computers for text editing, email management, browsing the web, and file management. These tasks will be described in this article, along with our overall opinions of the Mac experience with VoiceOver.
All right, so basically just the author's outlining his methodology. Anything worth talking about here?
Pretty positive, actually, first paragraph.
Yeah, it's. I think most of it's pretty fair. He's giving his methodology, which is good. I don't want to nitpick it to pieces, but I think the one thing that I did find a little bit disheartening, I think you can kind of already see where this article is headed, is the integrated, I believe was written in quotes, mm-hmm. which to me is just sort of a subtle, you know, kind of like we were talking about in that first editor section. It's like it's like they're slamming it already without even having said anything.
Yeah.
It's a little bit frustrating.
They've already set the tone for what we're about to get into. Anything else before we move on? I think it's, you know, we haven't really got into much yet. So let's move into the next section.
For the most part, line computer users take advantage of the Windows operating system for their computing needs, so they are accustomed to the way that operating system delivers prompts, its keystrokes, and its other characteristics. They are also accustomed to the ways in which Windows-based screen access software delivers information. Because Windows is so entrenched in the blindness community, users need a way to learn a new operating system. The manual that Apple has produced, VoiceOver Getting Started, does not provide this comprehensive introduction. Though it lays out the commands for using VoiceOver, it does not explain how those commands can be used in conjunction with OS X to make it friendlier. Email account review and creation get no explanation of layout or use. It would have been better to have a document that combines VoiceOver commands with those of OS X, so as to promote the use of the operating system first, with VoiceOver acting as its overlay. As an example, many Windows-based screen access software manuals go into limited detail about Windows and the way it works with the screen access software, especially in setting Windows and application-specific preferences to make the screen access software work better with the operating system or the application. This is not done in the VoiceOver manual. In Safari, for example, you can set up the browser so the tab key will move you between elements. This is not the default setting and is not outlined anywhere in the VoiceOver documentation. In addition, the instructions for using Apple Mail do not address how to open or save attachments.
Thoughts?
Ooh, lots of them.
Yeah, there's just so much rich material in this section. I mean, I think here's the not to jump all over everyone else, but
go ahead.
The number one thing that jumps out is how many times did he say Windows in this section?
He's clearly
coming at this from completely the wrong angle, where he's expecting this to all be done the Windows way. He's expecting things to be, it's like, he's talking about how to set up the applications to work best with the screen access. That's not something that, by and large, we need to worry about at all with VoiceOver. It's a Windows mentality that he is persisting through this whole section here.
Right. And he was mentioned that there was a lack of explanation about things. But and I don't know what the Leopard manual was like, but when I got my Mac and I got the Tiger Getting Started manual, there was some of that. I mean, there was an explanation about the Finder and browsing the web and text. And I don't know what there's like now, but, does anyone have experience with the Leopard Getting Started manual and can comment on that?
I have to say, I think I don't like the way, as Josh, well, what Josh indicated, I agree with. He clearly has a Windows bias and is comparing it and is also making the assumption that blind users are familiar with Windows. Well, many of them are, but for many folks, the Mac is their first machine and they're not. And I don't think that because Windows may be the predominant operating system, that comparison can be made. Most people, when they purchase a new thing, don't expect it to behave as whatever they were using, the old thing. If you purchase
right, exactly.
a new computer, it's going to work differently than your old one is. Otherwise, you would just buy a new Windows machine. This seems kind of
or
obvious to me.
Keep your other computer.
Yeah, so, I mean, and this goes with everything. If I buy a new washing machine, its controls are not going to be where my old controls were. I mean, whatever it is, new microwave, it's not going to behave the same. I'm going to do the same things with it, but the controls aren't going to be in the same places. It's not going to work the same way exactly. And to make that comparison is I think, a very poor decision. That having been said, though, I do have to say that I think Apple could do a little bit more work integrating in its documentation VoiceOver and the Leopard operating system. It exists, and there's plenty of documentation, but it's not all in the same place.
Yeah,
and
I would
agree.
I read this article,
I think that there's a lot of documentation that exists that the that simply wasn't looked at because it's not included on the Mac. A lot of it is on the web, which is okay, but the problem is it assumes you can get to the web to get it. And if you're just starting out and you just got home with your brand new Mac, you can't. You're not online yet, and you're not proficient in Safari yet, and you can't go to the Apple Access site and get all of this extra documentation. So it exists, but it does have to exist locally on the Mac. getting it.
See, I did just that. I actually did. I did just what you said, you know, you can't go and do and, you know, get the documentation. I mean, I immediately, the voiceover getting started, just the little introduction to voiceover was enough. I mean, I set up my mail account, and that's something he talks about. I mean, that was dead easy. I set it up. I was online. I got my email. I opened Safari. I went online, looked at the help documents on the computer, and that was that. I mean,
yeah, I didn't have any trouble. The one thing that I would say, I noticed in going through the Tiger, no, this is ancient history now, but going through the Tiger, getting started, it sort of implied that, you know, the VO, using the VO keys and stuff was the only way to do things, and you can use the arrow keys in certain, and I think if, at the same time, if they put all that stuff in, it would confuse people. So I think they use the VO way of doing it as a starter, and then you can sort of explore and figure out what works. And I think that's the real strength of the Mac, is there's not one way of doing things. And I think, you know, if you explore, and you shouldn't be afraid to explore and figure it out. I think that's the real strength, because you don't need a lot of help.
At least, absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
That's my opinion. But I know everybody learns differently, so.
The other comment is, he mentions that the tab key doesn't work in Safari, which I believe the default behavior is such that the tab key doesn't go to images or non-alt tagged images.
It goes to forms.
It does go to links.
It goes to forms, yeah.
To form controls.
That could be solved. I think that would be a good...
I always kind of thought that was an odd default.
Yeah,
I mean, they could make a notation of that. I mean,
whether it's a strange default or not, I think is kind of irrelevant. The setting is there. We are being given access through VoiceOver, and I see, one of the things I like a lot about the Mac is that we're not sort of guided into this paradigm of, well, this is how blind people use the Mac. It's very much of, here's VoiceOver, this is giving you some access that you otherwise don't have through what's built into the OS, ordinarily, what a sighted person would be using. And anything else beyond that, you're going to have the ability and the opportunity to make the same choices at the same times as everyone else. Well, I never used the tab key to move from link to link on the web in Windows, and that may be an oddity. I may be the odd one out, but regardless, it's, if you know that, if you've gotten to the point where you're on a web page and you've gotten Safari running and you've gotten to that point, you already know that VoiceOver and the arrow keys are going to move you around, and sooner or later you're going to find that how the tab key is working in Safari, and you're going to find the option to change it. And I don't think we should be forced into a different default than everyone else.
Well, one thing too that I think kind of goes into what you're saying is the thing that I really like about the Mac is you're right. There's not like a set path. It's very exploratory. Like, I know, for me personally, whenever I get a new app or I try playing with an updated app, I do that. I go through the menu bar. I go through the preferences to see, because I think I found that option to have the tab go to the link. I think I found that pretty much right away because, and this could be just me, but one of the first things I usually like to do is go through the preferences and see what the capabilities of the thing are.
Absolutely. I did the same thing.
So, I mean, I guess...
Yeah, I did, but I don't remember having trouble with that, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I never had an issue with the tab key either. I mean, I just went to the preferences, and I wanted to see what, you know, what settings you could, you know, were available, that sort of thing.
All right. Well, anything else? Because we've still got a long ways to go yet, so we should probably plunge on here, unless someone has anything else to add. All right, let's move on.
We have a few other concerns in the training and documentation department. The Apple VoiceOver tutorial is easy to use and is straightforward to bring up. We like the fact that this is offered and that it is integrated into the OS. VoiceOver has an audible learning mode, but the sound effects that VoiceOver provides are often faint and difficult to distinguish.
Okay, that's a shorter thing.
No, and a very strange thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes no sense to me.
I mean, okay, the sounds are subtle, but all the Mac sounds are subtle. Do you really want really loud noises that overwhelm VoiceOver?
Like, and do any Windows screen readers even use sounds at all by default?
I don't know. I haven't used a Windows screen for a little
while. Jaws has some sort of sound manager.
Doesn't Jaws have some sort of sound thing now?
Yeah, I don't think it has it now,
but it didn't always have it, just the last couple versions.
And it's not a default, is my point. So this guy didn't like the sounds. Mostly, you know, Windows screen readers don't use sounds at all.
I don't understand why it matters anyway. Like, what the sounds are just there to enhance.
Exactly.
Like, what difference does it make?
Yeah.
I mean, that just seems nitpicky to me. Like, I'm trying to find stuff wrong.
Yeah.
And frankly, I wish the sounds were a little more subtle a lot of the time. I think some of them are a bit harsh as it stands now.
Yeah,
I tend to be in that school of thought.
I like the sounds, I think they need to be a little more, a little less jarring in some cases.
All right, well, Steve, any thoughts? Pretty much.
Nope, just what's been said. I think they're not overly subtle. It's not like you can't hear them. I don't know. Well, you probably can't demonstrate this, but maybe to show how those sounds are. I mean, they should be quieter than voiceover, in my opinion. Obviously, you're trying to do something or read something and not hear cute little sounds. And if you don't like them, you can disable them. You have the option of shutting the sounds off so that you don't have these sounds playing while you're working if it's something you really don't want.
I don't know.
Or vice versa. I mean, you could turn the speech down a little bit and turn the audio up, you know, a little bit.
Well, that's true. I think I can demonstrate a little bit here if I turn it on.
VoiceOver on, Finder, Window, Quick Look Panel, Time, 0:19, quote. Play button.
So you can hear.
Enter full screen button. Enter full screen button. Play button. Time, 0:19, quote. 5.iff.
So you're hearing little thunder as you move through, and they're not overly soft. You can hear them.
No, it's pretty obvious.
All right. So I'll turn VoiceOver back.
VoiceOver off.
And it's a very strange, argument or complaint to have with it. I think it just no bearing in anything logical that I can see.
Well, I mean, let me just say one thing. I mean, I have a friend who's hearing impaired, and I've heard him say that about certain sounds. But he can hear most of the sounds. You know, it's the occasional one he'll have a little trouble with, but that's about it.
Yeah, well, yeah. Like,
but the sounds aren't crucial to using VoiceOver.
They're just there to enhance it.
Sure.
Yeah. All right, well, I think we've covered that, so let's move on.
Two major problems with OS X and VoiceOver are consistency and disorientation. As you are working with the system, especially after editing in dialogues, you often cannot tell where you are when you are finished. Many Windows screen access software packages signify that a dialog has been closed by telling you the window title that just opened, or saying edit to tell you that you are back in an edit area. They also say menu or leaving menu as you enter and leave the menu. In VoiceOver, if you are completing a task that causes the computer to work on its own without further input from you, VoiceOver provides no automatic progress report to let you know that the computer is still processing. However, if you focus your VoiceOver cursor on the progress bar or other progress notification area, it will audibly click by default whenever this area changes. You can also change a setting in VoiceOver preferences to have changes announced, but it is important to note that your focus must be on the progress bar or other notification area for either of these announcements to occur.
All right.
Okay. Wow.
I totally agree. VoiceOver doesn't say menu closed. It doesn't tell you.
Thank God.
I don't see this as bad.
I think if it did, I'd scream.
I don't want that.
Yeah.
Like, Jaws drives me crazy because it's like, when it's loading a web page, it's 10% done. And it doesn't mean anything. It's still loading. Like, you can still look and see if it's loading. I guess it tells you how much longer you've got to sit and wait, but
if you hit a key to open a menu and it says menu open, you know this. I mean, you just did it. If you choose something from the menu and it says menu closed, well,
that would make sense.
Absolutely.
It's superfluous. Sometimes I have had the situation where I fill something in and I don't realize something is happening, but very, very rarely. Normally, if I click OK or I click Next or Continue, I expect that something's going to happen. I don't need something holding me by the hand that says, "You just click Continued. Now I'm going to do something." And so the only exception to that is certain times where something happens while you're, say, for example, you're typing in data and it's verifying or validating the data as you're typing it or something like that, you might get a little less feedback. But those situations are so far and few between that I don't see it as a drawback. It just it seems clear to me that the reviewer is clearly comparing it to Windows and is missing what he's used to.
Even more than comparing, it's more like insisting. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. You know, I personally never had that experience. You know, I've also I don't know what he's talking about, but in terms of getting lost in the OS, it's like what does that mean? I mean, I've
disoriented.
Disoriented. And
that's weird.
Consistency. The Mac is very consistent. Like I find when you get a new app, you know, the commands you use, the kind of the way the screen is layout is.
The command prompt always brings up.
It's very much more consistent than
I don't understand that. And I think, like, one of the first things, like, I think the first day that I got my Mac and it needed to do some software update, when I noticed that, and I found it right away, when I noticed the ticking progress thing, I thought that was the neatest thing. Because you could, if you wanted to see if the progress was still going, you could focus on it. You didn't have to hear the updates. As long as the ticking was going, you knew that things were happening. I liked it. I still like it.
And it's optional. I just downloaded a bunch of updates actually yesterday. I think on the show we discovered that I had skipped a bunch of updates.
Yeah.
And once they started going, I didn't care about the progress. I don't want to know. When it's done, it'll tell me it's done. I don't need to know every percentage tick. Sometimes I do, but you know, when I was downloading 100 and some odd megs of updates, you know, I'd rather listen to music or do something. I know it's going to take a little while, and I don't want it to tick or say, you know, 15%.
Sure.
15%.
Yeah, absolutely.
And something important to remember with that goes, if you do want that constant updating, we have the hotspots feature. You set a hotspot, you tell it to read it to you, or you check it periodically. You don't have to go back to it, and you've lost nothing from your...
But his problem is holding you by the hand. That's what he's saying.
And it's quick. You can do it on the fly. I mean, you can set a hotspot. You can focus on the area if you want to. I mean, and then walk away and do something and listen from a distance. I mean, if you want that update, I mean, it's just... I won't continue.
Well, and it seems like that's what he wants. He wants to be handheld and told exactly what's happening, which, I mean, maybe that's what some people want, but that's not what all people want.
For the most part, though, with VoiceOver, you can emulate a lot of that through different settings and using hotspots. And if that's what you need, you have a lot of those options still.
Right.
I think a lot of this article is just unfamiliarity with the software that he's using and you know, in some cases, you know, almost choosing not to learn how to use it properly.
Exactly. Yeah, and obviously we'll see that more as we get into this. All right, well, let's go move on here.
VoiceOver has keys that you can use to move through an area. Sometimes in dialog boxes you can tab through controls, but at others, you must use the special VO keys. When tabbing, you can often hear the control type, edit field, checkbox, or pop-up button, but do not hear what type of information you are to enter. If you use the VO keys, you hear control labels, but they are separate from the controls and control types. From a keystroke standpoint, this means that, for each control in a dialog box, you have to move to the right twice to get both its label and the control itself. It would be more useful if the information in the labels could be combined with the control types and values, and if you knew when you were required to use VO keys and when you could simply tab.
I have comments.
Okay, you have the floor.
I agree with him 100% on this, except that I think the labels and the fields are not the same thing. We have this conceptual idea as Windows users that they are the same, and they're not. A label often does appear to the left of, but sometimes to the right of, or sometimes above, a field. And what VoiceOver does is gives you a real good conceptual overview of how the dialogue is laid out. And it allows you to work in a very visual environment in a very visual way. And so you can describe where in relation to a field an icon is, or a button is, or a label is. This is especially important on web forms and things like that. That having been said, I think that's a big plus for VoiceOver, because that conceptual information is something you don't get at all with Windows without going through a lot of hassle. Although, I think, in all fairness, it would be a huge efficiency improvement if they were more combined. I don't think I'd want to do it, though, at the cost of that conceptual overview. But I can understand what he's talking about. It is
you go ahead, Josh.
I was just going to say that some of this, if you know, from a more technical standpoint, in a lot of apps, it varies at the moment from application to application on the Mac. In a lot of apps, we do get both the control type and the label when you move to that control. For example, the search box in most programs like Mail or iTunes, it'll say search edit. Or I think edit search, or I forget what order it says it in. But the point being that we're getting that because they've, those programs have appropriate accessibility tags that have been included with the user interface when the developers designed the program. So it's something that I think the way that it's being done right now is great. If the developers put that in, put the accessibility tag in, great, we've got it. If they don't, we've got the conceptual thing that Steve was talking about. We can, you know, look next to or above a control and see what's the label that's associated with this. We've kind of, you know, in some ways kind of got the best of both with the way that it is now. Would it be great if more developers adhered to all the accessibility standards? Sure. Is that a big problem? I think it's a much smaller problem than, you know, how many developers adhere to accessibility standards on Windows. Seriously. I think it's a much better situation on the Mac at this point than it is in Windows.
Right. Now there are sometimes, too, where, and he is right about the fact that sometimes tab works and sometimes it doesn't.
So if tab doesn't work, you just use the VO keys. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the thing is the tab on Windows, it has been designed to, for the most part, in most applications, to take you through everything by the keyboard. On the Mac, the idea of the tab key is not to do that. The tab key is a quick way to the most used or pertinent fields. It's not meant to take you through everything. That's not the way the OS is designed. It's a fundamental difference between the two OSs. And to mark it as something, I am glad that in iTunes, when I tab, it's sources, edit field, browser if it's open, and songs list, you know, primarily when you're tabbing around. And I'm not hitting all these other controls that I don't care about at any given time.
Exactly. That was the, when you first started talking, I was thinking of iTunes as the example there, how it's more useful. But again, as we've said, the kind of common theme of tonight's show is the fact that it's different.
It's not Windows.
iTunes, yeah, by the way, does say search edit field. So
does it?
I have to see, when I just tabbed to it, it did say that. So
okay, cool.
Yeah. One thing I actually will agree with. As well, is that occasionally I've seen new users not know when to interact and when not to. But I think that tends to be, you kind of need to look at where you're working. Mm-hmm. Again, just take your time and look at the window. So, again, it's a contextual thing.
Right.
With that, I mean, I think there's a very, very common rule of thumb that and this is something I think Apple could probably add to their documentation and add to their tutorial if it's not already there. If you know you need to interact with something, if you expect that control contains something. That's the general rule of thumb. If it's a table, tables can, you know, contain columns and rows of information. If it's an edit box, if it's you know, any of these sorts of controls that hold information, those are the times you're going to be interacting. If it's a button, if it's a menu, if it's, you know, these kinds of things, a checkbox, they don't contain any information. You're not going to interact. That's will apply to any control, and it's something that I picked up on immediately when I switched to the Mac, and I understand that coming from the Windows world, for some that's a bit of an alien concept, but if you think about it in those terms, it's really not that difficult to grasp.
Right. No, and the quick start does make it clear, in my opinion. I mean, I had no trouble with it either.
Sure.
What he's talking about tabbing here.
Yeah, he's not talking about interacting yet. No. Oh, he did mention interacting.
Can we jump forward?
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll get there. Yeah. I as a point of where he really has a valid point is the address book.
Yeah.
Well, what I was saying about interacting is he mentions that you can't always tell what controls you need to interact with and which ones you don't.
Yeah.
That was what he mentioned.
It's later, though.
Oh, no. I thought, well, unless I... sorry about the time warp.
No, sorry.
That's okay.
That's right. But let's...
Coming up.
Yeah. So stay tuned, people. You get to hear about interacting in a little bit.
Yeah, I live backwards.
Someone's upper arm is going to be bruised, but we're not going to tell you.
Yet again.
All right. Moving along.
One other aspect of VoiceOver that is problematic is the lack of toggle keys. In many screen access programs, you can toggle keyboard help on and off by pressing the same key. In VoiceOver, you cannot do this because Control plus Option plus K turns it on, and then you have to turn it off with Escape. This also happens in other places within the VoiceOver environment, such as with scrolling mode. In the event that a password is to be entered, no feedback is given as you enter text into the password field. In instances where you simply use the space bar to check a checkbox, you do not get feedback about whether the checkbox is checked or unchecked. A good example of this is on the SMTP server setup page of Apple Mail. In dialogs containing lists, you have to force VoiceOver to read the highlighted item. Moreover, VoiceOver does not tell you how many items are in the list. When working on the dock, the Mac's version of the Windows taskbar, you can use CMD plus right and left arrows to move items around. VoiceOver, however, provides no feedback as you work. Clearly the program should provide some indication that items are being moved, and the item's relationship to others on the dock should be described.
All right, before we even discuss, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. I want to show you guys something.
VoiceOver on Finder, window, quick look panel, time, 1:09, quote. Right. Starting keyboard help, type keys to hear their names, hold down the VoiceOver keys while typing to hear VoiceOver commands, press the escape key at the top left corner of the keyboard to stop help.
Okay, that's a little fast, but it said, for people who didn't get that, press the escape key at the top upper left-hand corner of the keyboard to exit keyboard help. So...
Yeah, it doesn't get any clearer than that.
Yeah.
Can you demonstrate the scrolling mode?
The scrolling mode.
That should be the VoiceOver
window sizing
shift.
Yeah, VoiceOver shift S and then escape to get out of it.
Oh, all right.
Escape. Stopping keyboard help.
VO shift S, you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not even a command that hardly ever gets used.
Yeah, I rarely ever use it.
What is scrolling mode? What does it do? That doesn't work.
As far as I'm seeing, all it does is go.
Oh, well,
maybe,
it won't.
Maybe
I guess
VOS,
it won't
maybe.
VOS.
No, it's actually VO shift S, but it won't activate it unless you can use it on the particular area.
Okay, yeah, well, yeah, yeah, that's right.
I don't want to get out of this. I don't want to get out of the quick look thing because I don't want to lose my spot.
Okay, don't worry. I just wanted to see if it said to hit escape to get out of it.
I can tell you it does not.
What is...
So if Apple would just put a little statement that says, if you get into something and want to get out of it, push escape.
Yeah, because
but you think that'd be obvious, because
escape generally...
is what you use to get out of things.
Yeah, and all of it's that's pretty standard among, like, if you go into the web chooser or you go into the item chooser, escape always takes you out. That's just, I mean,
yeah,
that's just a mix.
How about just a menu on either operating system? If you decide you don't want something in that menu, you hit escape.
Yeah.
Yeah, this has just been a nitpicky section of things. I mean, it's basically just a little laundry list of things I don't like about VO. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sorry, but that's just my opinion because it's so disconnected.
What were some of the other things? There was the dock, and I guess that's valid, but...
Doesn't the checkbox, when you press VO space on a checkbox, it says checked or unchecked, doesn't it?
It does. Yes, it does.
If you push space, though, remember, he's obviously tabbing. It doesn't always say it. If you just tab to it and hit space, it doesn't.
Sometimes.
No, I don't think it does, but...
Is it not?
It does...
I don't know.
No.
It's not.
I don't do it that way, so I don't know.
Yeah, it just... It's not the way I've gotten used to it.
It's not the way you're supposed to do it. I mean, I guess you can do it that way sometimes, but...
Here's the thing. If you want VoiceOver to give you the feedback, you use the VoiceOver command to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really what it boils down to in the end. It's a very strange thing. I'm just going to throw one little... As long as he's nitpicking, I'm going to kind of nitpick back. This is completely pointless, I realize, but it's just something that I've noticed, too, that kind of goes with our theme of he's stuck in his Windows world. I got ripped apart in the mid-90s, coming from Apple II background and a Mac background to Windows, and my first internet experiences were on Windows, and there are two hotkey conventions for writing hotkeys out. On if you're an Apple or Mac person, all you know from all the way back to the Apple IIs till now, the convention is dashes between the keys. The Windows convention is pluses between the keys, and I realize this is a nitpicking, just like he's doing, but he's putting pluses all the way through here. And I remember the Windows, blind Windows users back in the mid-90s ripping me apart for putting the dashes in. And I just that was really funny.
Well, that's always how I write when I write command descriptions with the dashes. I never knew it was like there was two different sides to that particular.
At the time I didn't either. I was educated at, you know, back at that point, and I found it amusing in reading this article and seeing how focused he was on that this isn't Windows, and even with things like that, he's following the Windows conventions.
Now, in the interest of fairness, I will say that he's right about the dock. When you move something on the dock, it doesn't tell you. But I mean, is that a huge thing? Is that
well? That's the thing. I mean, for the kind of audience, he's basically saying a new user is going to have problems. But now, I would say, how many new users are going to immediately go to the dock and want to start moving things around?
Yeah.
Well, first off, he's wrong about the dock. It's option left and right arrow to move, not command.
I thought that was the case. That didn't make me question what I...
But I mean, sure, yes, it doesn't give any feedback. Okay.
And it doesn't give you feedback, but if you hit those two keys, which you wouldn't do by mistake, you are moving the thing that you are on. I mean, it doesn't take... If you push option left arrow, you're moving it to the left. And if you push option right arrow, you move it to the right. I mean, right. I don't know what feedback you want. You have moved this to the right? I mean...
Yeah, that is strange. I mean
you're moving over or something?
And I think even if you did want that kind of feedback, I mean, people could make the same... People could find little nitpicky things about the Windows screen readers. I mean, that's not... It seems hardly worth... You know, even mentioning.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What's the thing about list items and you can't tell how many things are in a list or something?
Yeah, again, he's using the keyboard, and this makes sense if you look at it from that perspective. When you get to a list, oftentimes, depending on how the list is set up, if you arrow down through the list and you're not using VoiceOver, it doesn't read you what you're on. But this goes back, I think, to what Josh just said. If you want VoiceOver to help you, use the VoiceOver keys. Don't use the keyboard necessarily and expect that VoiceOver will do what you want. VoiceOver read the items just fine if you use it. It doesn't tell you how many are in a list. I guess that's a valid complaint if you care.
Why do you care, though? What does it matter?
Well, that's just what people are used to in Windows.
Yeah. Two things to respond to Steve here. I don't think I've ever seen, though, where you do arrow with the arrows. Like, you know, you've got your messages in Mail or your songs in iTunes. Whether you're using VoiceOver or not, it always reads the highlighted item. I've never had to make it do that, so I'm not sure where that's
coming
from.
He's saying it doesn't tell you how many items, like 107 or 207 or whatever he's saying. It doesn't say that.
If that's all that he's saying, which, again, is a strange thing, for the most part, we're getting the same sort of feedback that a sighted person does. Is a sighted person going to sit there and count 1, 2, 3, 4? Oh, there's 7 items in this list.
No.
I mean, and I always thought how ridiculous it was if you went into a folder in Windows and you're on item 572 of 1,637, and you're
personally, I could never stand those announcements. I hated it too.
Exactly, and this is more information that a sighted person needs. This is more information than we need. It's not accomplishing anything. It's a weird. I always thought it was a weird thing. It was like, hey, we're going to give you this information just because we can, sort of feature in Windows screen readers.
Yeah.
Well, I think for some folks on Windows, it does help to make you aware that you're halfway through the list, or that you're nearing the bottom of the list or nearing the top of the list. I too find it very superfluous, but I have had folks get really disoriented when that's shut off because they want to know that they're about a quarter of the way through or whatever. I personally don't care, but that is, I guess, one of those personal preference sort of things. I wouldn't take away if a screen reader didn't offer it. I think it's one of those things, if you've come to be used to it and you're expecting it to be there and it's not, yeah, it's a little disorienting, but do you need it to be there in the first place? Probably not, and I think it's missed more than it's needed.
That's the way to put it.
The list box thing, and also in the case of a table, it does read what row you're on. It doesn't read the total, but it does tell you how many you're on. I'm looking at my inbox now, and it says I'm on row 973, which means I have a heck of a lot of messages I ought to delete.
I guess so.
Apparently.
But it doesn't...
Sounds like me last week.
Maybe it's good it doesn't tell me the total. I mean...
But actually, if for example, though, if you're in Mail, right above your messages table, if you voice over up, it'll tell you how many messages you've got in that box and how many
are
in the
right. Absolutely, yeah.
I don't want to know. I'm scared. I don't know what he's talking about with the arrowed list, but if he's talking about, and part of that's the problem, he doesn't really specify that specifically, but if he's talking about list boxes on web pages, he's, I believe, correct. But it bears mentioning that the Mac, unlike Windows, which tends to use two controls, the Mac presents information in different ways, and oftentimes what in Windows is presented as a list box is presented in the Mac as a table. Tables do read when you up and down arrow, as Josh indicated. Mm-hmm. They don't use the lists like Windows does. The only time you
talk about tables in a little bit, so we'll, you know. But yeah, you're right. When you move, you do get the, it does announce you that, tell you that stuff. Alrighty, there was a lot of stuff in that section. Did we cover all of it? You think?
I think so. Possibly.
Yeah, well, we're moving on, so.
Editing text. One of the primary uses for a computer, especially for new users, is creating, editing, and reading documents. TextEdit is Mac OS X's primary document management solution. A few tasks are particularly important: opening and navigating pre-existing documents, creating new documents, spell checking documents, changing formatting, and adding elements such as headers, footers, and tables. Opening documents works fairly well using VoiceOver. The only problem arises in dealing with the list of files and locations. Often in VoiceOver, you are forced to interact with an item, which means telling VoiceOver that you want to work with this item, and this item, only in a dialogue. For a long-time screen access software user, this interaction is a new and foreign concept that adds more keystrokes to an already keystroke-intensive system. Also, it is never clear when the user needs to interact with an item, and when using arrow keys or other means of manipulation is sufficient. Once a document is open, you must figure out how to edit it. One of the issues that cause Windows users most trouble is the way VoiceOver reports where the cursor is when arrowing through, backspacing, or forward deleting text. Often, when arrowing across a line of text, VoiceOver repeats characters multiple times, and reports an incorrect character under the cursor. When backspacing, it is difficult to know which character is about to be deleted, so sometimes you delete the wrong character. The same problem occurs in forward delete because, instead of removing the character to the right of the cursor, deletion begins with the character under the cursor. Sometimes, when you're inserting text into a document, the string drops in at the wrong place, because of incorrect character reporting.
All right, a lot of stuff here.
I'd like to take this one first if I can.
Go for it.
I was thinking that you would, because...
Yeah, we discussed this a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Okay. Here is where I think one of the most crucial differences between Mac and Windows comes into play, and the author of this, is not even aware of what he has done. Visually, in Mac or Windows, the insertion point, which is the place where you're going to be entering text in an edit field or a document or whatever, appears between characters in either operating system. There is no deleting the character that the cursor is on. The cursor is not on anything and hasn't been on anything since DOS. Windows screen readers have been reporting the wrong information, essentially, to users for years because they come from a DOS background. It's been emulating what users were used to way back in the DOS days. VoiceOver, by contrast, announces what the insertion point is moving past as it passes it. If you're moving to the right and it says O, you now know that you are to the right of that O. If it says O when you're moving left, you now know that you're to the left of that O, and you get a much better idea of the exact position of the insertion point. So essentially what he's saying here is he's confused and VoiceOver is doing it wrong because it's giving him the right information. That drove me crazy when I read this.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, there's never an indication whether to interact with something. It's like, that couldn't be more wrong. I mean, there's never an indication? That's certainly not the case.
If it says table or list or, you know...
If it's anything that can contain information, you interact with it.
And they tell you that in the quick start.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or like group or... You know, there's so many things that imply like a container. And, yeah. You know, when I first heard of VoiceOver, I wasn't sure about that whole interacting thing. But now, I really like it because I like the fact that you get, like, an overview of what you're working with. And it doesn't seem very cluttered. It seems very organized. And if there's something you want to deal with, you deal with it, you know? Like, a good example is iTunes. If you're not interested in what's happening in the iTunes store... then you don't interact with that area, and you just skip right past it. And that's, I love that aspect of things.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, have you ever looked at a Windows Explorer window with the JAWS cursor or the mouse pointer with Window Eyes? You're arrowing through it, and you get this mess and jumble of information that is completely disconnected, and you have no idea what you're looking at. And if mm-hmm. you need to get to something in that form or fashion,
well, if you tab out of the list view in Windows... and you get lost. Like, I'm like, where's the... can't find the list of files. I'm in the places list or... like, just
right. Awesome. And then the cursors don't always track right outside of, you know, their little predefined areas.
Yeah.
So it's messy.
But I think it's just, again...
It's a fundamental difference between the two screen readers.
And...
or the two operating systems.
The two operating systems. Was there anything else in there? I think we...
No, just the idea of the misreporting characters, random, you know, they said about VoiceOver misreporting characters. Yeah. It's just a horrible thing to say. It's like...
And it explains it in the manual. That explains that in the text editing section of the manual for
it
sure.
It does.
Yeah, it's just I just want to say, it's not a smart way of... he may not like something. Excuse me. You know, in this, he may not like what he's reviewing, but to say it in this way... is really, really damaging because, you know, even if you don't understand what something's doing or it could be, you know, doing something wrong in someone's estimation, to say emphatically that you know, there's never a way to tell this. It's reporting wrong characters, incorrect. I mean, it's really not a smart way of doing this. It's very damaging, I think.
Right. Steve, any thoughts?
I think the most valuable part of that last thing was that he says, for Windows users, about 5 times or so it seems, for Windows users, and it underscores what we've been surmising all along, that he's obviously writing this not as a fair assessment of the Mac, but as a how the Mac may appear to those who are Windows users, and not the Mac on its own merits. Right. But, and that shifts this, because it's being touted as a review, and it isn't. It's a observations from a Windows user perspective, which is fair, if that's what it is, but it doesn't view the Mac on its own merits. It just views it based on preconceptions that one might have coming from Windows.
Exactly.
And it's just good to see it kind of admitted in writing in that paragraph.
And it's, the thing is, and we've talked about this all episode, but going right back to the first podcast that Holly and I did, and when we talk to people who are considering switching to the Mac, the thing we always tell them is, you know, OS X is not Windows, and VoiceOver is not JAWS. And if you can let go of that, you're going to be a lot more successful. If you can't, you're going
to
fail.
You should stay. If you can't let go of that, then you shouldn't switch to the Mac.
Absolutely.
If you're going to constantly like, this isn't what I'm used to, this isn't how it's done in Windows, then stay on Windows.
Yeah.
Honestly, don't switch to the Mac, because you're not going to have a good experience.
Yeah. I mean...
And that's fine. I mean, people can stay on Windows. It doesn't matter. It's not... I mean, I personally like the Mac better, but... I mean, don't switch to something just because you think it's the new thing, and, like, if you can't handle it, don't switch.
Yeah, and if you're happy where you are...
Then stay where you are.
But I mean, I think a lot of people, like switchers, I mean, there are certainly people who have always used the Mac, but for switchers, people are switching for a reason. And there could be any number of reasons, but there's some reason. So why should it be like Windows? I mean, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, I think that's that section. So we're moving on.
Saving a document is easy, as is starting a new document from scratch. Two aspects of the VoiceOver text edit combo that cause difficulty are document navigation and save all capability. There is no quick way to move to the top of the document or to its bottom with a single keystroke, as Windows provides. Later in our research, we found a new keystroke. In most edit areas, you can use CMD plus up arrow to move to the top of the document and CMD plus down arrow to move to the bottom. The fact that this is an OS X keystroke further illustrates the need for documentation that includes both OS X keyboard commands and those for the screen access software. VO plus A is the keystroke denoted for say all, which reads the entire document. Unfortunately, no matter where your cursor is in the document, this keystroke starts at the top and reads the entire document unless you are interacting with the scroll area.
All right, so
can I go?
Go ahead.
Can I just say VoiceOver Shift Home?
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And Shift End to get to the beginning or end. I mean, yes, you can do it with Command. I mean, I think most people use Command Up and Command Down and so on. But and going hand in hand with that, there, you know, he's talking about later in his research, he discovered the Command Up and Down arrows and so on. You know, it was a substantial period of time before I knew about Control Home and Control End in Windows. There's nothing in the, at that point in time anyway, there was nothing in the screen reader documents to teach me the Windows, basic editing hotkeys. Things have probably changed in the 15 years since then, but, you know, you learn these things as you go. You find them by accident. You know, I think I read about the Control Home on the internet somewhere and was like, oh, that's really useful. You know, it's just such a strange set of complaints about the, well, you know, I couldn't find these hotkeys. So
what is their list of expertise?
Pardon?
Isn't there a list of... Sorry.
Oh, no, that's cool. Go for it.
Isn't there a list of shortcut keys in the help of yes. macOS 10?
Yeah.
There is. It's also in the context help, and it's in the quick start. They tell you about those VO shift home and VO shift end.
Yeah, I know that's in the manual, but I was wondering, like, command up arrow and down arrow. Are those in the... Because I didn't learn about those until later, but I knew about the voiceover shift home thing.
It might be hard to find. It's under the keyboard command section, but, I mean, they're blatantly there. Yeah.
But the thing, and, I mean, unless this was something that was published before, like, why would you write that and then, like, well, actually, what we learned was, like, that just seemed really weird. Like, there's no way to do this. Actually, there is. Like,
well, because, yeah, I mean, it just to
he's
me,
saying it wasn't in the documentation, so it wasn't clear, is what he's
saying. Yeah, but it almost seemed like he went back later and added that in, but why not, you know, modify that whole section? It's just...
But it is in the documentation. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I was asking. What is his expertise? Because I'm wondering what, you know, how he approached this quote-unquote review.
Well, it said he spent a week with it.
You notice he also didn't write OS 10 correctly in that section.
Did he not?
No, it's. I mean, Alex is saying OS X, and if it's ever OS 10, it usually pronounces it correctly, so I'm assuming he must have written it out wrong.
Oh, that's a good point. I hadn't even... I guess I'm just used to hearing it right sometimes and wrong other times. I didn't even think about that. That's
something that we all get wrong, I think, sometimes, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just saying that if you're going to review something, though, you should be careful that you're getting this, you know, the information together correctly. You know, I don't know. It's just
I'm exactly
a perfectionist in that way. But
yeah, that's why I was saying, what is his expertise? You know, what is it? What are his credentials? You know, at this point for technology. I mean,
lazy journalism.
It says in the beginning, it said he was an access technology specialist.
Yeah, and that's, I hate to say this, but I would not want to work with him on a project. I wouldn't want him working on a project I was working with because
very familiar with JAWS and Window Eyes, maybe Windows.
Well, maybe so, but I can't tell from this review because it seems really sloppy to me.
Yeah.
I think that's the point, though.
All right. Anybody else with anything there? Nothing heard. Move on.
Throughout the operating system, it is necessary to deal with data presented in tables. This is especially true on the internet and in some text documents. VoiceOver's tutorial outlines keystrokes that can read a table by row or column. Unfortunately, this means that the particular column or row is read in its entirety. There seems to be no provision for reading the table cell by cell, or to match the data in particular cells to any column or row headers. Reading tables this way can be quite confusing, since making sense of the data in the way it is presented is not straightforward. The functionality to read a table cell by cell, reporting column headers, has been available in Windows-based screen readers for quite some time, and is an important feature, especially in internet applications.
I don't even know of a hotkey to read an entire row or an entire column.
They exist.
In screen readers? In Windows screen readers?
No, not in VoiceOver, though. He's saying that this exists in VoiceOver, and I actually went looking after I read this and couldn't find anything that reads an entire row and an entire column.
It exists.
One thing that's... I'm a little bit sympathetic here, because if you go through the VoiceOver Quick Start in Leopard... There is a section about tables, and it's really weirdly...
It's weirdly done.
So, but still, that's not... You wouldn't read... Even if there were those commands, that's not how you would do it. You would interact with the table, and as you move around, it tells you. It tells you the headers. Like, if you're in iTunes, you know, you move through your thing, it will say track, and it'll say the track name, and time, and artist. And those are the column headers. You know,
which you can also read with VoiceOver Shift H as well.
Mm-hmm. Right, but is he talking about tables in text edit at this point? Because it's really, like I said before, it's a little sloppy. It's difficult for me to understand.
He's talking about tables in general, I think.
I think, yeah.
Okay.
But
honestly, you know, tables in text edit, people do have trouble with that. Yeah. But I can't tell from reading this what he's meaning.
It's jumping around.
He's kind of lumping
a lot.
Them together, and because he's also talking about tables on the web, which are confusing.
Yeah,
but they're both completely. I mean, there's so many different sorts of tables, and he's trying to lump everything together. It does make for very sloppy, very confusing review. Granted, the tables thing has been an issue I'm sure that we're going to see that fixed. I mean, I think it's something that's been worked on, even though I would never recommend Opera, since they made it accessible. It does have better table support for web browsing and things. So I think that sort of thing is coming. I mean, there are some weak spots, I think, with tables. Is this something that is, absolutely detrimental? I'm not sure. To some people, it is. But again, I think it kind of goes back to what Steve just said. It's so unclear and so lumped together, right, that it's very strange.
And when we get later on, when he talks about mail, we'll revisit this, because we'll see examples of tables that, work.
I want to ask a question quickly, too,
right,
because, he's coming from the Windows standpoint. If you get a new Windows machine, you're going to have Notepad or WordPad. I don't believe either of those have the ability to even create tables in a document. I believe you have to have...
Yeah, they
do. Right, exactly. So, it's, again, he's holding this to a way different standard, if he is talking about text edit, because how could even a Windows user work with tables in editing a document like that? Because those two standard packages come with Windows, they can't do it. I mean, that's a whole, you'd have to buy a package like Office, which does it. And I mean, in this case, you could buy iWork, which also does it, and tables do work. So it's kind of,
that's a really good point.
Strange.
That, yeah, if we're talking about the built-in applications, you have to compare them fairly.
Another point here too is I know we'll get into this a little bit even further with mail and tables, but if you do start to looking at the tables that are controls like that in mail, Windows equivalent is list view, and list view, we have we're much less able to explore and look at the information presented in those than in table controls on the Mac. So,
right.
Yeah. All right. Next.
Making a document look professional is an important use of a text editing program. This includes adding tab stops, headers, footers, tables, and text attributes to the document. When you are adding tabs by pressing the tab key, VoiceOver will say tab and will let you know where tabs are when you arrow through the document. It provides no indication of how far from the left edge you have moved with each tab, as some Windows screen access software programs report. Blind users cannot add tables to a document. The tables dialog, in which you define the rows and columns for each table you want to insert, reads very poorly. Interaction and use of VoiceOver keys does not help remedy this poor reading. When adding lists and text attributes to the document, you must first select text as you do in Windows. Take care when selecting lines of text, because if you are not at the beginning of a line, using the select line command will select text only from the cursor to the end of the line, and then to that position on the next line. The command VO plus F6 will report the text that has been selected. It would help if this command had a more easy to remember keystroke, but it is good that this function exists. When copying and pasting text, the system does say copied but does not give feedback when the paste keystroke is pressed. When you cut text, the Mac says selection deleted. It should more appropriately say cut, so that the user knows that the text was not just deleted.
This is a bizarre section.
Yeah, again, he's also nitpicking. Again.
Yeah. First of all, let me just throw out a couple of things here. Again, it goes back to holding this to a different standard. He's basically comparing text edit to Microsoft Word, which is a ridiculous comparison. It's like comparing WordPad to Microsoft Word. It's a strange thing. Even that aside, I don't know about you guys, but every time I hit Command V, I hear paste.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know where that's coming from either. If I hit Command X, I hear cut. And
exactly.
you get more feedback with VoiceOver in this way, because things like JAWS, that feedback has been scripted into JAWS. So if you're actually in a program where Control X does something other than cut, JAWS still says cut.
Yeah, even though it's doing a different action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, VoiceOver, on the other hand, is reading the menu option that is associated with the command that you're pressing. So any command is going to report correctly in any program, not just cut, not just copy, not just paste, not just save. Any command that you hit is going to report correctly in whatever application you happen to be in. Right. So I think the selecting text thing, again, this is just, it's different than Windows. The Mac conventions, the Mac way of doing things is different. If you are going to Mac, you should be expecting that things are not going to necessarily work the same way as they do in Windows.
Okay, yeah, I mean,
I have a quick comment. And this is nitpicking, but he was nitpicking as well. Do we want to really get into the strange keystroke debate? Because there are some really strange keystrokes in all Windows screen readers.
I thought of the same thing.
Like, I don't think you really want to go there.
Minimize all apps, I remember, was insert F6 in JAWS. Yeah. That was the first thing I thought of. It's like that, yeah, because...
And insert F12 is, say, the time and date. So
yeah, I mean, where is the logic in that? Yeah.
Yeah,
what
exactly.
I was going to say before was just in selecting lines of text, I mean, I don't want it to automatically jump me to the beginning of a line if I don't want to be jumped there. You know, I'm glad
it's reporting visually what, and that's the difference. It's a visual aspect. It's more in tune to what the cursor actually is on the screen and where it is visually instead of assuming things.
Mm-hmm. And the reason that it selects the way that it does, for anyone listening who may be curious, if you're in the middle of a line and you're holding down the shift key and you press the down arrow, yes, it selects the rest of that line, and yes, it selects the half of the next line. It's doing that because you're moving the insertion point down, straight down, from one line to the next, and it's selecting everything between those two points. To me, that's a much more logical way of that command working than the way it works in Windows.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's actually a really good way to think about it, because if you think about what it's doing, like, and how the insertion point moves, that actually makes a lot of sense. All right. Was there anything else? Steve, did you have anything there?
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems real clear to me that this whole article is written with preconceived notions of how things ought to work because it's the way that certain Windows screen readers do them.
Sure.
This isn't a certain Windows screen reader, and as such, it shouldn't behave like certain Windows screen readers. I think the point was made earlier that if someone's wanting to go to the Mac, they should expect that they will do things differently. If they're wanting to do things not differently, then they should stay with Windows, and it will be the same. The Mac is a different operating system. It behaves differently, and the VoiceOver screen reader behaves differently. And to expect it to not do this is just silliness. And I think, as we argue a lot of these points, it's really clear that basically that's what he's saying, is we expect the Mac to do the same. You know, it should say cut. It shouldn't say deleted text. Well, why should it say cut? Just because Windows screen reader users may be more familiar with it, that makes it right? Why shouldn't... I mean, it's funny that he makes this point, because what happens is the text is, in fact, deleted. It's not... You know, I mean, it's saying what it does. And just because Windows does it one way, doesn't do it another way, you know, doesn't mean the Mac shouldn't do it another way. And I think the point of VOF6 is is very valid. There should be a better way to remember these things. Well, yeah, maybe. I guess one could argue it would be nice, I think, to be able to define frequently used voiceover keys and put them somewhere else, possibly. I would like to see that in a future version. But as you guys just mentioned, a lot of the JAWS keystrokes and Windows keystrokes, not to pick solely on JAWS here, but are very cryptic. Insert F11 to get to the system tray.
Yeah.
Insert F6 to minimize applications, which isn't even needed since there's a built-in Windows key to do the same thing.
I'm worried about that.
You know, insert three. I mean, you know, there's a bunch of
keystrokes
that you just...
This doesn't make it any easier to remember, but one thing to keep in mind is that the voiceover key, VO function keys, are all things that relate to the cursor or selections in some way. Like, you know, pressing one key will show you where the mouse pointer is. It's all related to that. So it kind of makes sense that it's there, but it, yeah, like, I mean, it. If you use that feature a lot, you'll remember it, but, you know.
And, I mean, the thing is, too, there's only so many keys on the keyboard. You're never going to be able to create a program with the complexity of a screen reader with as many commands as any screen reader has, be it VoiceOver or any other one, with all the keystrokes that make perfect sense. It's never going to happen. There's not enough keys. There's not enough letters in the alphabet. There's just not enough space to. And I think VoiceOver does better than most. I think WindowEyes tries more than JAWS does in that respect as well. Kind of giving you things that are, you know, this letter stands for this. You know, JAWS only does that to a certain extent, I think. Right. But regardless of which of the screen readers you're using, you're always going to run into these hotkeys. I mean, I noticed that he says it should be something easier to remember than F6. Well, what would be easier to remember? I mean, can you think of anything that would be?
VoiceOver
S for selection, maybe?
Yeah.
No.
But then, you know, somebody else might come along and say, well, no, it should be VOH for highlighted. Or, you know, I mean, you could argue any number of things, and I think...
And those keys might perform something that's more logical, like...
Exactly, VOH's, or more useful.
Yeah.
I mean, again, going back with what Steve was just saying about, you know, the preconceived notions with all of this, I think I Twittered earlier and said it's like, you know, going in and, you know, buying a bicycle and expecting to be able to control and steer it the same way as you do your submarine.
Right.
And I mean, and that's, I think that's, you're talking about two completely could not be more different paradigms. And I mean, this is a bit of an exaggeration because the Mac and Windows do have things in common, mm-hmm. but you do sort of have to go in with that mindset that this really is a different world that I'm stepping into. And he clearly, I don't think he even tried.
Right. Okay, well, let's keep going here.
Shortcut keys for adding text attributes like bold, italics, and underline work from the main document window. Reviewing the format menu allows you to see the check marks in front of options active in the text under the cursor. It would be nice if, like shortcut keys for adding text elements, a simple keystroke could add a list to already selected text. This said, the menus for selecting types of lists to be added are fairly easy to read. It is confusing, however, for similar types of numbered lists. It is difficult to tell whether, for example, you are adding Roman numerals or Arabic numbers, since VoiceOver reads both as 1, 2, 3. If you want to copy and paste styles, it is possible to do so using the copy and paste commands and options in the menu. VoiceOver contains an option that allows it to read text attributes, such as bold, underline, or italics, as they change throughout the text. Though this works well in a document, VoiceOver also reads the attributes of the text within dialogues. Changing page options to the page setup dialog is impossible with VoiceOver. Interacting with controls within the dialog does not make them usable, and tapping around the dialog does not provide meaningful feedback.
Alright, so the first thing, that feature we're talking about, you know, pressing something should automatically make the text into a list, wouldn't that be more criticism of TextEdit? And again, like what we talked about before, comparing, if you're going to compare it, you have to compare it to WordPad, and I'm sure WordPad doesn't do that either.
No. It has absolutely no bearing whatsoever on VoiceOver.
All right.
Or accents.
Anything? No.
Actually, the only fair thing I can say in that one is that the numbers do get announced, you know, the Roman numerals and Arabic get announced the same way.
Right.
And that's fair.
Okay, now what about... I haven't really done a lot with printing. What about the page setup dialog? Is what he's saying have merit there? Does anyone...
I'm looking at it right now.
Okay.
I mean, it print setup works fine. I'm not sure exactly what he's referring to in the page setup. While Steve is looking at that, I'll also like to point out that you've got the voiceover T command. If you want to check your attributes as well, you don't have to have voiceover reading attributes for every little thing everywhere all the time. It's another one of these things where he clearly just didn't know how to use the screen reader and is saying it has shortfalls that it just simply doesn't.
Right, because if you turned on the feature announce all attribute changes, wouldn't you expect it to announce all attribute changes no matter where you were?
Like, absolutely. I mean, he's trying to, you know, it's...
I don't understand what he wants.
Yeah, well, he wants two things at once, mm-hmm. you know?
Right. Here's my thought on the page setup dialogue that he's talking about. First off, I'm using VoiceOver because I want VoiceOver to read it, so I'm not tabbing through the dialogue because that doesn't work and it's not how you should do it. Page attributes is a pull-down menu, and you can save it as default or pull up the original default. In other words, what Microsoft Word might call a template, or the default layout, at least. Then we have format for any printer, or I have my PhotoSmart printer, and so it's showing me my various printers in this pull-down menu. Okay. Paper size, it's set on U.S. letter, but I can change this if I wanted to have the U.S. legal, A4, A5, so on and so forth. In case I don't know what U.S. letter is, the next thing it says is 8.5 by 11 inches, so it shows you the measurements. Orientation, here's the only weird part. Orientation, there's two checkboxes next to orientation. The first one is checked, the second one is not. And there is no context help on either checkbox. I happen to know that the first one is portrait and the second one is landscape. But fair play, that should be labeled.
Those should be labeled, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep. And then we have scale, and we have it set to 100%, which is an editable thing. And we have a help button, a cancel button, and an OK button. So I'm accepting the two checkboxes and the fact that you have to use the Mac the way that Quick Start shows you to use the Mac versus the way that Windows screen reader users are familiar with using Windows, I'm not seeing any accessibility
issues. And obviously, I'm not making excuses. Those checkboxes should be labeled. But yes. In most situations, it usually is portrait and landscape. Usually the settings are often in that order, at least, from what I've...
And portrait is going to be the default.
Yeah, portrait's going to be your default unless you changed it. So
yeah, but I think he says totally unusable.
Not usable.
Yeah, he said it's impossible.
He actually did say impossible. You're right, Kara. That's impossible.
And he's talking about the page setup, right? That's what he's for sure...
So it said page setup.
So how...
You can't tab. It's impossible to use. I don't understand...
How that's how he. Okay, whatever.
Like, that's just wrong. That's not even a matter of it's not the way I'm used to. It's wrong. What he's saying.
I want to go back to something real quick. I think we skipped over this. I don't think it was in this section. The spell check thing?
It's coming up.
It's coming up.
Oh, it's coming up? Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought we missed it. Okay.
No, wait, no, we're still.
We're doing that time thing.
Yeah.
I want to say one more thing, actually, before we time warp.
Okay.
I want to apologize to the listeners here. Tab works fine. It doesn't read... when I tab through, this is what I hear. Page attributes, any printer, U.S. letter, a checkbox, 100%, help, cancel, okay. So I may not know what those things are, as was discussed earlier, because the labels are to the left of those controls, which, I read when I used VoiceOver. But tab takes me to all of those.
So if you knew what you wanted, you could get to the control you wanted quickly.
Yeah, if I wanted to print on legal or print on A4, it would be very easy to do that totally from the keyboard. So it's usable either way. He I don't know what he did.
Doesn't even sound like he tried it. All right. Anything else? Okay, let's keep going. I think we may be getting spell check next. I'm not sure.
Spell checking is another important task in document management. Unfortunately, this is one of the most difficult tasks in the Mac environment. One of the biggest drawbacks to spell checking on the Mac is the lack of a reliable option to check the entire document. In most Windows-based scenarios, a user can choose such a function, and it will prompt at each misspelled word in its own dialog box. In this way, the user can choose suggestions from a list and have them spelled automatically. The spell checker can be instructed to ignore correctly spelled words in a single document or learn words that it has not recognized but that are commonly used. On the Macintosh with TextEdit, the user must deal with each misspelled word individually. CMD moves from word to word. Once landed on a misspelled word, you must use the context menu key VO plus Shift plus M to pick available options. Words that are offered as replacements are not automatically spelled as the user moves through them. This is a drawback, because an extra key must be pressed to make VoiceOver spell the highlighted suggestion. When TextEdit lands on a word suggestion, it is automatically highlighted. If you are distracted and forget that this is the case, you can inadvertently delete the entire word by pressing any character key on the keyboard. The Mac does have an undo keystroke, which can be used immediately following the mistake, if no other action has been performed. The fact that a user can so easily delete text is disturbing, however, because if the user goes on to write something else without realizing what has happened, the text is gone forever. At times, the CMD keystroke incorrectly reports the misspelled word. It often reads the last misspelled word, which is now correct, instead of the word the cursor is currently on. For example, let's say we have the sentence, Mary had a little lobum, whose fleece was white as snow, at the top of a document. Pressing CMD semicolon should report the first misspelled word, as had, and should offer had as a suggestion. This first correction works fine. Press CMD again, and lobum, corrected to lamb, should be the next correction. However, often, had, the word that was just corrected, will be read instead. This continues throughout the document.
What is he talking about?
Okay, so he's talking about
Clueless.
Command semicolon, which I've not used. You normally use command colon. Isn't command
and
colon?
That brings up a dialog box!
That's exactly
and it's a dialog
he's
box.
Describing it.
Right. But this, and you can get a list of words.
Ugh.
Exactly what he's describing.
This is the second time this has happened in an article. I don't understand why people get this wrong.
Nor do I.
Because it's clearly in the edit menu under spelling. It says, show spelling and grammar, command, shift, semicolon.
Yeah. Well, you can do either way. What he's talking about, command semicolon, does it basically goes through the document without doing the dialog box thing. Mm. And yes, it highlights it. Now, you could have done it with the dialog box, more or less the same as Windows. So it's very, very strange that he's saying that this doesn't exist.
Exactly the way he's described that, you know, with the learn button
that you
and the ignore.
He says you can't do it, though.
It's exactly.
Oh, and it's horrible because it's the most difficult thing on the Mac in the Mac environment. Yeah. That's a horrible thing to say. And, just because he's got it wrong.
And the other thing that's, I think, is really worth noting is, and comparing, since we're comparing the two things, that spell checker isn't just for text edit. That spell checker is everywhere. In email, even on like a web form. That spell checker is available.
Twitter, you can use it for Twitter clients as well.
Yeah. Any edit field, I think, has access to the...
Yeah, it does.
And last I knew, I don't know about Vista, but Windows doesn't even come with a spell checker at all.
No,
you have to have a separate one.
You have to have...
But, I mean, you bring up a dialogue, you choose a word from the list. You know, it's as fast, if not faster, than anything I've used in Windows. I fly through documents.
This is the thing that makes me the angriest of this whole article.
Yeah, because
it's
there.
This is the one issue that I can't...
Exactly what he's describing is there. Exactly what he wants is available. I mean, you can do the approach that he did, if you just have a few words, but you can do it. You could...
Well, here's another thing to throw out there too. What I can give him to some degree. Occasionally, I have run into the where it's speaking the last misspelled word. That only though happens if you skip if you've decided, you know what, I don't care that this word is spelled wrong, or this word is spelled right and I know it is, And you don't, you know, you don't even check. Basically, it's reading the previously highlighted thing. It's not a frequent problem, and I don't think I've ever run into it in text edit. It's usually mail, I think, that has that.
I've never used this spell check the way he's talking about.
Yeah, when it's a problem, you use the command shift colon, and you get the dialogue box like he wants. So
yeah.
It's a very strange...
That to me is the easiest way, because it's what I'm used to, I guess. And so I've never tried the other way. So
yeah.
And that's what makes me angry, is it's there, and it's easy.
Well, yeah, it's just a shame that he posted it this way in this article. You know, it's damaging.
And it's the second time it's happened, is what I'm saying. Like, the other article...
Yeah, this was in the AFBA review as well, from what I remember.
Yeah, and I don't understand it, because it's there, it's exactly what they want, and, you know... I guess, what more can we say about that?
Now, he's hitting... VO...
No, he's just hitting commands, just command semicolon.
Oh, command semicolon.
Instead of command shift
Instead of command colon or command shift semicolon.
Yeah.
I just want to see. All right, the first one is had. Had. Please don't distract me because I don't want to delete this.
Yeah, because that would be disturbing.
I have never seen a review use the word disturbing, ever.
Yeah.
I've read hundreds of
The Exorcist is disturbing, people.
Okay, so here we go. I'm going to hit commands, semicolon. I fixed had, so I'm going to do this again here. And it says had unhighlighted. So he is correct. It is saying had unhighlighted. Now let me do my complicated VO of 6. And lamb, it says lamb. If I do my VOF6 command, you know, the one that reads the selected?
Yeah.
SC. No,
that you can't remember?
But yeah. It's like he chose the one that he was going to have trouble with instead of the one that he actually wanted.
But he said it wasn't even there, though. He said spellcheck.
Well, he obviously didn't know, again, which is why I asked earlier, what, you know, what kind of, you know, research has he done? What is his expertise? Because it's just, it's not well done.
No. All right.
Now, when I did command semicolon again, it says lamb unhighlighted, and it highlighted fleece because I really can't spell fleece. And
but that seems like a tedious way to do spell check. I like the dialogue books better, but that's...
Yeah, I wouldn't do spell check.
Well, it depends on what you're doing. This is much more fluid, and I mean, the unhighlighted thing is not... The typical, that's not usually what happens with the command semicolon.
I didn't even know that was there, honestly.
I use the command semicolon a lot.
I didn't know what it was for.
I use the command semicolon a lot in things like the Twitter clients or chat
or something
where you have like one line and you might have a misspelling on it. So you hit that real quick to see, is there anything wrong here? And
I could see it being useful for email if you've responded to a message and you want to check your stuff, but you don't want to fix the spelling of the person you're responding to. So I can see it for that. But
responsible for your own misspellings.
Yeah.
How do you, I guess I'll ask this because I honestly don't know, and he brings it up, so we may as well address it. I'm looking at my pull-down list of substitutions for fleece, and there's a couple that do look right, but I can't tell what they are. There is no way to spell in that list, is there?
Voice over W. Which would read the word or spell it out if you hit it again.
Oh, that's right. That spells it. All right. And now when I hit command semicolon, it dings and says, check document now. Which, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it means it's all done.
It means it's done. But that is confusing. So
yeah, that's a little confusing.
Yeah, if you're going to use the approach that he describes, there's a little bit of a learning curve. But... Or you could use the way he says isn't there, and it's exactly the way that...
Use. There's
yeah, and you can spell those words by just reading them. You don't even have to do the VO keystroke.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. So I think we can move on from there.
I think my blood pressure will come down eventually.
I'm hoping mine will. I'm not as confident.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on before something crazy happens.
Browsing the web, Safari is the only web browser that works with VoiceOver for browsing the internet, internet browsing with Safari, and VoiceOver presents major problems. Two of these issues can be somewhat mitigated by changing some settings under the web area of the VoiceOver utility. Ensure that Move to It when loading the new web page is enabled. In addition, in the Safari preferences, be sure to check Press Tab key to move to each item on a web page. This can be found under Advanced Settings. Most screen access software will read a web page when it is fully loaded, but VoiceOver does not do this. This is a problem, because it is difficult to know when the page is fully loaded, and the user is often interested in having the screen access software read the page content aloud automatically. If the user wishes to deal with the page in more detail, he or she can stop this reading, or wait until it is finished, and then explore the page.
Okay, does anybody do that?
Ugh, no.
Listen to the whole page as it loads? And first of all...
It makes a loading sound.
Yeah. Did that noise not tip him off that maybe it was done doing something?
Well, maybe he couldn't hear it. See,
yeah, maybe it was too subtle.
It was too subtle, exactly.
Yeah,
the slamming of the door noise is, yeah. Wow. You know, and this section right here should have actually been entitled... How to get your VoiceOver Mac screen reader to behave as much like a Windows one as possible. I mean, that's basically what he's trying to accomplish through, you know, through this whole...
Well, see, that's the thing.
Josh, I noticed earlier you were saying that Opera worked, but I guess you were wrong because that Safari is the only browser.
Shira works, Opera works, there are at least, I think, three or four. Opera's not a good choice. Shira works just as well as Safari, if you like that browser. I didn't keep it because I I like Safari. Mm-hmm. The browsers, there are two, let's back up. On Windows, you have... Mozilla as a HTML rendering engine. You've got Microsoft's Internet Explorer rendering engine, and you have WebKit. Those are the three most common ones available on Windows. On Mac, we have and on Windows you have Mozilla and Microsoft's that are accessible for whatever
Firefox
web browsers.
Has been accessible for about 4 years. Like before, it was just Internet Explorer for the longest time.
Right, exactly. And on the Mac, anything that's WebKit-based, we only have two. We have WebKit and we have Mozilla. Anything that's WebKit-based is going to be accessible as of now. Anything that's Mozilla-based is not. The browsers themselves is sort of irrelevant. It's the way that the HTML is rendered. So we have... You know, one out of two on the Mac versus two out of three under Windows. I think those are, are the 50% to 66% is a pretty close race at this point. And you certainly have choices browser wise.
Mm-hmm. So, Opera's WebKit then? I don't think I realized that.
Actually, I think Opera is its own thing, and they've chosen to make it as accessible as they.
Oh, I see. Okay.
As they have.
That's what I thought. Yep. I was kind of confused about it.
The other important thing is that the Mac, and this was admittedly this was disorienting to me, but the Mac doesn't have to have the whole page loaded into a virtual buffer before VoiceOver can read it. And I think with Windows, we are used to waiting that long because it has to see the whole page so that it can format it and properly buffer it. And in the Mac, it doesn't. As soon as the text starts showing up, you can start reading it, even though in the background other images might be loading or some Flash components may be loading. The page may finish and refresh, as some pages do, but... You don't have to wait for the page necessarily to load. You have to wait for something to appear. But this concept of loading is, I think, a little bit different.
In WindowEyes, what used to drive me absolutely crazy, and I don't know if it's still like this, but yeah, when you were waiting forever for a page to load, all you could get was loading page when you move the arrow keys. That used to drive me crazy.
It's gotten better.
I don't want my screen reader to read the entire page. I just don't. I don't care about that. But he's saying it's almost like he's saying that's necessary because most people like it. Well,
I don't even know anyone who does that.
No, I mean,
either.
because pages aren't meant to be read top to bottom.
Yeah, I don't want to hear home link, news link about like.
No.
I don't want to hear that. If I want those, I'll find those links. I want to hear the content of the page. You don't want to read it from top to bottom.
No.
I never did that in Windows either, so that's just nitpicking, I think, too.
I think in all fairness, though, not that I want to do anything to support this review, but there is a big feature that's missing, at least for me, and it depends how you use it, but you can't use that say all and read a page. And that drives me crazy when reading an article or a lengthy blog post. I want to sit back and have it read it. You essentially insert down arrow in JAWS.
Say all from your current position. But if you stop interacting with the HTML area and do say all, it will do it from top to bottom like what he wants.
But I think I think that that's true. It needs to be there from your current position.
Yeah, it has to be. I agree. That should be there.
Definitely. Yeah.
I agree.
But I mean, there are ways around it, too.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that needs to be there. You're right. All right, well, there's more on web browsing coming up.
Detailed page navigation is extremely cumbersome with VoiceOver. As it is set out of the box, Safari does not use the tab key to move between links and elements. With this setting changed, you can move between the links and form controls on the web page, but at times, you are not interested in just the form controls and links. VoiceOver is also set not to move directly to the HTML content area out of the box. If this setting is not changed, the blind user cannot tell where he or she is positioned or how to get to the page content. Navigation by group is not accessible to blind users because the information is not presented predictably or logically, so testing was done primarily with VoiceOver set in Document Object Model DOM navigation mode. If you want to browse the web page and are not interested in just navigating through the controls, the process becomes quite keystroke intensive. First, one begins by interacting with the HTML content area. To read the text, keep hitting VO plus right arrow. This reads the text and stops at any form controls. Then you must hit VO plus right arrow again to move to and read the link or form control. Repeat these keystrokes until you have the information you want. The process is painstaking, distracting, and cumbersome. Keystrokes are available to move by headings or other page elements, but they are not immediately apparent and had to be pointed out to us. Because the Mac help system is primarily based on HTML, these concerns also apply to the Help Viewer application. While surfing the internet, it is necessary at times to download and save files. Though Mac OS X allows file downloads, the process is ambiguous with VoiceOver. When you click the download link, the computer automatically downloads the file and places it in the downloads folder. No indication is given that the download has begun or is complete. This leaves the blind user uncertain where the file has downloaded or the computer is encountering difficulty.
Okay, so the popping up of the download window didn't tip him off?
I guess. Yeah, and there's a list.
Yeah.
Can I just say one thing before we all start in?
Okay.
And that is that in one sense, he wants to say the Windows user, and in another sense, he says the blind user. It's really, I mean, it's a horrible perspective because he switches between the two and tries to make it out like universally across the board. This is what we all need.
This mode is not accessible to the blind user. No.
Just for a second, case a Windows user, or a blind user for that matter, is listening to this podcast, when you click to download a file, what happens is that a window pops up when the download begins, and that window shows you the progress of all of your downloads. It is a window within Safari, and it's one window that shows you the status of any files you have downloading concurrently. So if you're getting three files, those three files are shown in that window. As he indicated earlier in his own review, you can, if you care, focus on the progress, and you can read the percentage, you can read how many kilobits per second, and you can hear the ticking if you want to monitor that the progress is progressing. When the download is finished, there are a couple of options. It doesn't play a sound when the download is finished, and that's something I would love to see. But
Firefox doesn't either, though. So.
Yeah, but I still want it. But I can use it just fine without it. I mean, you know, I don't need it. I just want it. Now, the other thing that it can do, if you want it to, is you can have it automatically do something with the file. For example, if it's a zip file, you can make it automatically unzip the file. You may not want to do this. I don't want to do this because sometimes I want to download a zip and I don't want to unzip it. But if you choose to, you can make that happen. So there are some options that can be auto done when a download is complete. When a download is finished, you can also make it disappear from the window. There is an option to remove completed downloads from that window, so that if you switch back to the window, you'll see that the download is finished because it won't be there. So I think this is clearly a different way of doing things, but a way that works just as effectively as the Windows way. It is more a, again, things not working the way that he's expecting it to work in Windows versus a way that it has to work. The impression here, I think, is that it has to work a certain way for it to be effective.
Well, I think it's worse than that because he's saying, I'm sorry, because he's saying that there's no way to see it. You know, he says there's no way to see the status of a download, and that's a really, it's not a wise way to say this.
Well, he's also saying, and this is not downloads related, but he's saying there's no way that a blind user, groups mode is not accessible to blind users. And that's just plain out and out wrong. He doesn't know how to use it, that's fine, but you can't just say it's not accessible because I don't know how to use it.
I mean, it's a hotly debated thing, in the like, which is better. Some people like groups mode, some people don't. But people who do like it use it quite effectively. And if that's, like, to say that it's not usable to, I don't even know why you'd say that, because if it wasn't usable to a blind person,
in VoiceOver,
why would it be there? Why would it be in VoiceOver? I mean, it's very different. And this is another one of those, an extreme situation of not what I'm used to, but people, you know, and some people like DOM, some people like group, and both are quite useful. And one thing they didn't mention at all, and I don't think they do coming up, are the choosers, the link chooser and the item chooser. You can very efficiently move around pages, and the commands to jump to next heading, you know, to the things like that, they work quite well. I don't know, you know.
Well, it's VO command H. I mean, how obscure is that? I mean, yeah. You said they're obscure and hard to find. It's VO command H.
He was talking about the thing with where it's tedious to move right arrow. That's where groups mode comes in. And that, I mean, it's a debated issue, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I agree with him that DOM mode is tedious, but the thing is in Windows, it's the exact same thing, except it's a down arrow instead of a voiceover right arrow. It's exactly the same thing. You read a little piece of text, and then you hear the next line's got the link, and then you're a little another piece of text, and then it's exactly. This is, which is why I don't like DOM mode, and I use groups mode, which, as far as he's concerned, wasn't even worth testing.
Yeah,
I agree that there needs to be something read from cursor. I mean, I think that needs to be done, but at the same time, you can't just say something's not accessible because you don't know how to use it.
And groups mode does alleviate some of the need for the sale. I mean, I never used sale in Windows very much anyway, but you're getting large chunks of a page read to you in their entirety without having to do a lot of this arrowing. And if I can just rewind, because I wanted to bring up one other thing on the downloads window thing as well. You know, he's being extremely hypocritical, I think, in this review in places, and particularly here, because he goes out of his way to say your only option is Safari, and then he goes off into this thing for a web browser, and then he goes off on this thing with the downloads window. The downloads window in Safari is almost, and the way it handles that whole thing that Steve just went through, is almost identical to Firefox and Windows.
That's what I was thinking. That's exactly what I was thinking.
You get the download window, you get the list, you can watch the percentage of all your downloads, you can clear them out. I mean, it is almost exactly the same, and yet he is complaining that it's not the same as Internet Explorer, but wants to also say that, well, we only have this one option. Everything needs to be the same way as Windows, but I want to have options as well. It's a very strange point of view to come from that really doesn't make it. It's like, what can I say so that I can complain as much as humanly possible. I mean,
yeah, that's what this
that's
is
the way
like.
It's coming across.
Right.
Definitely. I mean, with it's bothering me that the idea that the tedium aspect, you know, he says how tedious it is. He's not talking about the item chooser, which is the fastest, slickest way I've ever seen to get around a web page,
absolutely.
Whether in Windows or out, you know, in Windows or Mac, any platform, you know. So he obviously doesn't know that. He doesn't know the keystroke, you know, option tab to go between form fields. He doesn't know the keystrokes in the VO help, you know, just the menu options. You know, the VO command H, the VO. VO command shift H to go back and forth between headings. You can go between, you know, plain text. You can go between links. You can, there are a plethora of keystrokes, you know, to get around a page.
And unless I am mistaken, hang on, I'm going to check right now. We've spent a lot of this podcast checking things, but as I recall, yeah, if you go into VoiceOver F7, where you've got all of your commands listed out, it's got all that stuff listed. It's not like this stuff is buried.
No.
You can find all of these hotkeys.
Yep.
And VoiceOver H twice will give you a menu of the most logical things to read based on your context, logical commands, VoiceOver commands that you could use given the control that you're sitting on and the context that you're using VoiceOver at any given moment. If you know any of this, if you even took a few minutes to look at the VoiceOver quick start tutorial and this sort of thing, you would know these things. And I have a tremendously hard time believing that he spent a week with the Mac and VoiceOver.
No. All right. Well, I think there might be another section on browsing, but I don't think so. I think we're moving into email, but we'll see.
Managing Mail. Apple Mail is the mail reading application in Mac OS X. When using an application like Mail with screen access software, a blind user should be able to set up the mail account, initiate sending and receiving new messages, read incoming mail, compose and send new messages, attach files to outgoing messages, and deal with attachments that arrived with incoming mail. Apple Mail setup had one major problem. VoiceOver would not read the field labeled full name, making the user unsure what goes in the field. Two areas of the setup process contained multi-page dialogues. To get to the second and following tabs of these dialogues, the user needs to arrow to the desired tab and then press VO plus space to activate it. It would be more straightforward if there were only one keystroke to move to and activate a tab. If the user only arrows to the tab wanted and then moves away, nothing changes. The lack of audible feedback is confusing because the user does not see the screen change, so cannot figure out why moving to the second tab does not bring up new options. This problem occurs when editing the SMTP server list and on the account information screen.
Bill sigh.
Yeah.
Heavy sigh.
I want to say thank you, Apple, thank you very, very much for not making it automatically change tabs.
Oh, can you imagine how horrible that would be?
How difficult would it be?
Oh, my goodness.
You know what? You'd only ever be on the first or last tab, because once you move through the tabs, you'd never be able to use
a middle
tab.
What does that even mean? Clearly he doesn't know what he's talking about at this point.
No, I think I know where he's
I don't remember ever having a hard time with the full name field.
It sounds like he's having a quirk or something.
That's a situation, maybe tabbing doesn't do it, but there's probably that label, as we talked about.
The label's there, tab doesn't read it, and what he's missing here is that in Windows you have a control tab to move between property sheets. Accept for the moment that this isn't Windows, that it's another operating system, and that things might be done a little bit differently, there is no keystroke to move from property sheet to property sheet, as we would call it in Windows, or tabs, as they're called in Mac speak. This is, however, similar to in Windows, if you tabbed to where it says property sheet, which is, by the way, unclear. I have clients ask me all the time, what is a property sheet? And you use your left and right arrow to select a property sheet, and then you tab if you tab over where it says property sheet, it doesn't change anything. If you right arrow where it says property sheet and then tab, you start tabbing within the newly selected property
sheet.
Yeah,
it selects the tabs as you go to them.
Yeah, so he's missing the control tab feature, which isn't there. It's
now,
not
one thing some option. Applications have, and this doesn't really help you for exploring, but maybe, and I don't know if Mail even has this, but I know iTunes does. You can press command and one of the numbers to jump to a tab. Like command one will take you to the first
tab.
Yeah,
many programs use that. Command one for the first tab and command two for the second and all the way down the line.
That's not clear. But I think what he's wanting is, like, he wants to be able to right arrow, like Steve was saying in Windows, you know how you can just right arrow to a tab. That's what he's wanting. I think he's wanting that. I'm not really sure, because if you voiceover arrowed over it and it changed, that would be really.
Yeah, and I like the way. I mean, I'm having trouble remembering what it was like.
I know I
was, but I like the way where you see all the tabs, and then you just voiceover space on the one you want.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, when I was first starting, I thought, okay, it'll change. It took me two tries to realize, okay, it's not changing, so I'll try this. I mean, how big of a deal is that, you know?
And it's much more the way that a sighted person uses their computer. They're going to take their mouse and they're going to click on the tab that they want. And we're doing a very similar sort of concept.
Yeah, right. All right, so anything more need to be said there? I think we've got it pretty much covered. And now more Mail.
We found a few problems with receiving mail as well. In each message, VoiceOver reads a long text string, including the words unread, body, subject, and sender. If a field is blank, the title is still read followed by the word blank. Though all of this information is helpful, it could be more concise. Unread, John Smith, subject today's meeting, for example. Empty field headings and the word blank do not need to be read as VoiceOver now does. VoiceOver should also be reporting the presence of attachments as the user looks through the message list. For example, attachment John Smith, subject meeting. If a message does have an attachment, it is difficult to figure out how to save it to the computer. The VoiceOver Getting Started manual does not explain how to deal with message attachments. A detailed explanation of saving and opening attached files should be added to the manual. In addition, the Quick Look panel, which presumably allows one to preview an attachment, did not read with VoiceOver. If you are using mail with multiple accounts, it is extremely difficult to know that mail has been successfully received and into which mailbox new mail has arrived.
All right.
Well, this is the most bizarre section, I think, even with everything we've seen so far. He's got, I'll tell you, the one thing, I agree on the blanks. However, if you're interacting with the table, as I think you probably should be, and as most people are using it, you're not going to hear that anyway as you're going through your mail. That aside, though, attachments, file menu, save attachment.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I have a question, and maybe one of you guys can check this quickly. Is attachments one of the columns you can add in that, in the message view?
Oh yeah,
is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought
mine shows
the header for certain.
Does it read?
Yeah, reads fine. It'll tell you how many attachments. It'll say one item, two items, three items.
Okay, it'll so
right next to the message.
I don't remember having trouble with that, but I don't remember it.
I think the issue with multiple accounts probably doesn't. It falls under the category of it's not the same, and he doesn't understand how mail works. Because I like the way a mail works, if with multiple accounts, where you have kind of the unified inbox.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that. And I like that if you want to go to an individual one, you can, you know, open up the inbox and select.
And it tells you how many unread messages you have for each one.
If you expand that inbox view, yeah.
Windows mail clients don't do that either. They don't tell you in which account how many messages.
That's what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm. The only thing that they can do, and I don't know if the Mac can do this or not because I never do it this way, is there's a column in Windows that you can turn on that will show you for which account the message is. So if I get a message from Josh and he sent it to my work account versus my home account, there's a column that shows.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, the Mac has that
as well.
Has the two. Yeah, you can add that.
So that's, yeah, I, with Outlook, it never told me if I received mail for 3 accounts. It didn't say, you've received 38 messages, 15 of which were from your work account, 5 of which were for your home account, and 19 of which were from your spam account or whatever. It never gave me that information.
No, this is really odd.
I do agree with him, though, about the reading across the rows.
Yeah,
if
I agree
you
with
were
that.
Going through it, just...
But if that's only if you're using it that way.
If you interact...
That's why I use it.
The way I do it is I interact, find the subject field, and then I just move up and down, and I just hear the subject line.
I use it that way with the entire row, and that does get tedious.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice to know the from and the subject. I also do it the way that you do it, Darcy, in reading the subject. But occasionally I'll delete a subject because I think I don't care about it, when in fact I would have cared about it if I knew that you had sent it, for example.
Okay, I've done that. I've certainly done that before.
So it would be nice
if there's any doubt at all, I just arrow once to the... I think I've got mine set up on the right, but either way, you arrow once over to the from field and see who it's from, if there's any question whatsoever, and that's it. Usually,
yeah, I do it that way, too.
Yeah,
but that is tedious. I mean, admittedly, that could be improved. I think that could be changed.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's move on. I think we're
also. I should say you can turn off, and I do this too, and it makes it less tedious. Is you can turn off the row or the header announcements for tables, so it wouldn't say from such and such subject such and such. It just says the John Smith meeting. It doesn't say. You know.
Yeah.
Right. And a lot of the
columns you're not interested in, like if you're not interested in the date sent or date received or whatever,
and that helps.
Turn those off. So, all right, and that we good for that? All right.
Dealing with files, it is important to manage efficiently the many files that fill a computer system. This is doable with the Mac, but we have a few concerns. A user must be able to manipulate the table containing the list of files, but doing so adds extra keystrokes. The Mac reports that a file has been copied when you press the copy command. Then, when you move to the receiving folder to paste the file there, you get auditory feedback that a transfer has taken place, but only by a faint sound, no verbal confirmation.
That's true. Except that you don't have to use it in table view.
Well, it says paste, but it doesn't say when it's finished.
Yeah, but it goes, dialogue.
Yeah.
Well, you get a sound, and there is a dialogue. If you're pasting a large file that is taking more than 5/10 of a second to copy, you get a dialogue that shows the progress of the copy.
Yeah, and if the dialogue's not there, then you know it's transferred. Like I don't.
Well, yeah, that's the same thing that happens in Windows. There's a dialogue, and then when the file's done copying, it goes away. I mean,
exactly.
Windows doesn't pop up something saying,
and you don't even get the sound in Windows.
Yeah,
I don't understand what he's saying here. Also, manipulating files uses extra keystrokes. It's like, I'm sorry?
It's like manipulating the table, but...
But I mean, in order to do anything with any files, anyway, you're going to have to navigate to a file on any system, which is going to take keystrokes.
What table is he talking about?
I guess
the... Did he leave it?
I assume he's just referring to the Finder as a table.
I think he's using Outline View.
Outline View, yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing, which is, I guess
that's the first chapter of VoiceOver. It outlines the different views, but okay.
Yeah, there's different views in the Finder, and you can cycle very quickly between views if you want, or choose your favorite view. Before we did this podcast, I made the comment because Darcy uses something called Column View, and I use something called Icon View. There's different ways you can do things, and it depends what you like personally, and if he found I'm assuming he's using Outline View here, complicated and didn't like it, there's 3 other views that he could have chosen from, one of which he may have preferred.
Yep. And that's the thing. And you can jump between them really quick.
I think he's having a Windows stumbling block because I think he probably used List View. And List View is what you're supposed to use in Windows. Like, that's the easiest one. And I think, again, he's thinking of Windows because he probably put it in List View because that's what, but it explains in the first or second chapter of VoiceOver when it talks, the manual, when it talks about the Finder. you know, explains all about the Finder and all the different views and stuff, and it says you can use whatever view you want, so...
Yeah, and it describes them.
So, yeah.
I don't think there's any extra, like, I don't remember, at least when I switched to the Mac, that there was a lot of extra keystrokes to do that sort of thing. Like, it was the same keystrokes. I mean, okay, yeah, you have to hold down the VO keys, but...
You gotta move to the sidebar and stuff like that. I mean, that's just getting used to the new navigation, though.
Sure.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it actually, in a lot of cases, depending on the view, I mean, it's a whole lot. I think column view, one of the reasons I think a lot of people use it, that's the one I primarily use. I do occasionally use the outline list table view, whatever that is. Mostly I use the column view, and it's substantially quicker to navigate around than Windows when you're flitting back and forth between the tree view and the list view and, you know, expanding branches in the tree and, you know, all of these different sorts of things. The column view is very quick and easy and intuitive, and you can drill down into a large folder structure in seconds.
You know what used to happen to me all the time? And it could be I just didn't have something set right in Windows, but... When you got to that tree view, the look in, it always said, like, at least Windows said, like, look in, you choose the part. Inevitably, when I would move in there, I would hit the 3.5-inch drive, and then it would make the noise, like, there's no disk in there, and okay, and all that stuff. That always happened to me.
That always happened to me, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it happened a lot.
Yeah.
But you get the same sort of thing with the sidebar. Sure. It always tells me that my iDisk isn't
working. Yeah, I took that
working,
off
and I don't even have it. I don't know how to get rid of it.
Yeah,
can I get rid of that?
Yeah, if you go into Finder Preferences, there's a section for sidebar, and there's checkboxes where you can pick what you want to see on the sidebar.
Actually, I believe, too, if you hit... Let me double-check this before I actually say it, but I believe...
I mean, it's no big deal for the podcast. I just...
Yeah, if you hit the... never mind. I'm not correct. I was thinking if you hit the toolbar button, it would make the sidebar go at the same time. I thought it did. It does not.
But yes, you can customize the sidebar. All right, so I don't know if there's one more page before the summary.
Oh, no, that is correct. If you hit the toolbar button that's in every Finder window, the toolbar and the sidebar list both disappear off the screen. That's all you have to hit is that toolbar.
I didn't know that. I didn't know you could get rid of the sidebar.
Get it back again.
It treats them like one entity, basically.
How do you get it back again then?
You just hit the toolbar button.
The toolbar button will still be there.
Oh, the toolbar. Okay, yeah, okay. Yeah. Oh, interesting.
That's pretty cool. All right.
During testing, we had to call Apple Tech Support. One of the first things required was the system serial number, which was very difficult to find. The technician did not know how to help a voiceover user and could not provide clear instructions. This was another instance in which I was not sure whether I needed to interact with the data in the About This Mac window. I had to use voiceover keys, which took a bit of time to figure out.
All right.
Well,
voiceover on, Finder, window, quick look panel,
I'm gonna
time,
slow this
0,
down
3,
a little
quote.
Bit.
Pitch 50%, volume 100%, intonation 50%, rate 100%, pitch rate 100%, 88. 0.
Whoa.
2%.
Just while you're getting set up there, just a little note. Does Microsoft know anything about JAWS or WindowEyes when you call them?
No.
I'm just saying.
Granted, they don't make it, but
yeah.
Well, yeah, granted, but I think that to expect every representative at AppleCare to know all of the voiceover commands is a bit much.
Yeah.
Actually, if I go into the menu bar,
I disagree. I've heard that same
Apple.
Comment from
Apple menu.
People who have called support and not gotten help with VoiceOver. And my initial thought was the same, that if you call Microsoft, you don't get support for JAWS or WindowEyes or anything else. But right, wrong, or differently, they do bundle VoiceOver with the Mac. It's
about
a
Mac,
supported
Mac,
product,
window,
and they should
Mac,
support it.
Version 10.5.7.
If they... do it internally, I guess I would have no problem, even if they had like one or two designated people somewhere that any voiceover people could get sent to get support. But one of the big I think selling points for the Mac is that it's a unified experience. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to support, it's not. No. And that's a big problem. You get someone.
Yeah, definitely.
I've gotten people who are really good who will say, I don't know, hold on, you know, can I put you on hold for a few minutes while I get the documentation and try it out? I had one technician say, okay, let me start VoiceOver on my end and I'll walk through it with you so we can make sure we're hearing the same things. And I thought that was fair because they were really trying and eventually we were able to get the issue resolved. Other representatives haven't helped very much and apparently he spoke to one of those folks. And that's, I think, something Apple really does need to focus a bit on.
Maybe. I guess my point here was that he is, through this entire thing, pushed this is not the same as Windows, and then when it's something that is the same, that he can spin negatively, right or wrong, I agree that Apple, could have more AppleCare people familiar with VoiceOver. I have had, both the good and bad experiences along that line as well. When I got my very first Mac Mini, had never, tried VoiceOver, never did anything. I walked into an Apple store, and they actually had a visually impaired person there working at that moment who was able to show me the basics of how to use VoiceOver, which was really impressive.
What was he doing that I needed the serial number anyway? Because I've only needed my serial number like two or three times.
Or maybe if it was AppleCare something related, but let's okay. See. I haven't been in here for a while, so let's see how hard it is to find my serial number.
Software update button. Processor. Software version 10.5.7. Software 2 GHz Intel Core Duo. Memory. 2 GB 660 more info button. TM and 1983 2009 Apple Incorporated. All rights reserved. All rights reserved.
You have to click on more info.
Okay. TM more info button. Press Finder, Window, System Profiler, Window, Darcy Bernard's MacBook, Contents Table has keyboard focus.
And I think vertical splitter.
Hardware overview. Model name, MacBook Interact, hardware overview. New line.
But he said he wasn't sure if he had Interact or not, so.
Yeah, but it's a big text thing. I mean,
I know, but he was.
MacBook 1, processor name, processor speed, 2 GB, number of processors, total number of cores, 2, L2 cache, 2 MB memory, 2 GB, bus speed, 600, boot on version, SMC version, system, serial number, system, 4H60311WU9E.
Yes.
There we are. That wasn't really,
but that just goes back to his not understanding VoiceOver.
He also said he didn't know if he had to use VoiceOver keys. You're using VoiceOver.
He said he found it tedious to use.
Stop interacting with text.
In this particular section, I thought it was that he didn't know whether he was supposed to use the VoiceOver keys.
We said he didn't know whether he was supposed to interact or not.
Yeah.
Like you said, both.
So regardless, it just wasn't. Well, I mean, if you don't know, you can just try.
Play.
Right? Button.
Yeah.
Time 0:23. Quote.
All right.
I mean, it's not like a big deal.
It's obvious throughout this whole thing that he doesn't understand this concept of interacting and so forth. That's, I think, if he had a clear understanding of the concept of interacting with controls and elements and where you would do this, a lot of his presumptions would not exist.
Right.
If we take it, if we assume that a person doesn't understand how to interact or, well, how isn't fair, where you need to interact or exactly what happens when you interact, a lot of this review makes a lot of sense. VoiceOver is really dependent on you interacting with the thing you care about, the thing that you want to focus on. Not the thing the computer wants you to focus on, but what you, at the moment, want to focus on. Whether that's a transfer dialogue, whether that's a copy dialogue, whether that's a spell check dialogue, whether it's a download, whatever it is, a message table, you have to focus on it, and that's very different than in Windows, where the system tells you what is focused. And if you don't have that conceptual understanding, a lot of this interview makes sense. And I think that's one of the things when I train someone to use the Mac, especially if it's someone who's been a Windows user, that's what we cover in the first few lessons, ideally the first lesson, but that's such a foundational skill because everything builds off of that. And that's a huge, huge difference between the Mac and Windows. You have to know what you want to focus on versus the computer or screen reader saying, this is what's focused. This is what you need to pay attention to. Mm. In the Mac world, you need to tell it, this is what I care about, which is, you know, sort of how you do it visually.
Exactly.
So I think that's where his...
Exactly. And I think if people understand how Josh explained it, where if it's something like some sort of container, if it's something that holds something else, whether it be a table, a list, then you kind of have an idea when you have to interact. But anyway, I think the next page is the summary, which we're pretty much going to hear all the same stuff again, but we'll hear it and then we'll see if there's anything we need to discuss.
Two other important applications are the address book and the calendar. Calendaring is provided by iCal, Apple's calendar application, which appears to be totally inaccessible to VoiceOver. On some levels, the calendar recognizes that the date is set properly within the operating system, but VoiceOver keeps announcing December 31st, 2000. If you attempt interaction with the calendar view part of the screen, nothing happens. When you attempt to create an event, the title can be entered, but arrowing, pressing enter, or performing any other keystroke that might make progress toward entering other event data seems to take us out to the calendar window. Sometimes I can find events, but I can find no pattern for doing so. We also tested the address book application that ships with OS X. It was easy to look through the names of people already in the address book after interacting with the table containing them. We made a mistake in the name area while creating an entry. It took a long time to figure out how to tell OS X that an edit needed to be made, and more time to figure out how to get VoiceOver to work with and manipulate the edit controls. Starting and stopping interacting with various parts of the window and clicking options throughout the menus finally allowed the edit.
Okay, let me jump in here. A couple of quick things. Address book has some issues. There's no question. The editing of fields is difficult. Getting to the point where you can edit them, I don't understand where that was. That's a problem. It's a checkbox that says edit, strangely. And if you check it, you can edit. And if you uncheck it, you can't. It's really that simple. But the iCal thing, iCal is definitely a complicated program. It's definitely, a program with a learning curve. It is not by any means inaccessible. In fact, I don't think there's any part of iCal that is inaccessible. I've used it. I like it. Yes, it took a while to learn and understand how the program works. I wish it was a little more intuitive. But he clearly has had no concept of how to use iCal or, really how to use VoiceOver to figure out how to use iCal. And this is, I think, again, sort of a big theme through this entire review.
I kind of agree with him. It took me a long time to figure out address book. And with that whole editing thing, it made sense once I realized the checkbox was there, coming from the window side, though, where you can open up an address card and everything is editable automatically if you open it. You have a summary property sheet, and then if you go to your other tabs, those are automatically editable. So you don't have to explicitly say, I want to edit this. By virtue of having opened the card, you can edit. One could make the argument, as he did earlier in the review, that if you opened up an address card and got distracted, you could inadvertently delete the phone number or something. I mean, so this is a little bit weird. It is definitely different. And I still sometimes have to remember that I have to hit that checkbox because I'll try to edit something and it won't let me edit it. Definitely labeling could be better in address book. However, I have over 400 and some odd contacts with it and have no problem at all changing, editing, modifying, and so forth. Once you understand how it works great. iCal is doable, but not intuitive. There are third-party instructions that explain how to use the calendar much better with VoiceOver than Apple's instructions do. If you know a few tips and tricks, you can use iCal very successfully. I use it for all of my scheduling, and I have lots of appointments every week, often lots of appointments every day, and have no problem with it. But it does assume that you're familiar with certain commands that, short of trial and error, you wouldn't know about from the document, from the documentation. Specifically, if you make a new appointment, you can type the title, you hit enter, and then if you hit Command E for edit, you can deal with that and add information, change the location, change the start end date, set alarms, and so on and so forth. But you may not think to do that, because the presumption is that if you're making a new appointment, obviously you would want to edit that sort of stuff. So I think a big part of this is him not knowing how to do things, but I have to agree with him in that both of these applications are tricky. They are very complex, and with complexity comes a degree of difficulty.
The thing I take issue with though is that that's not what he is saying there. With iCal, he says that it's completely inaccessible with VoiceOver. That was his statement. And well, that's what I take issue with.
False.
Yeah.
I don't know where the other thing that struck me was this December 2000 or whatever it was reading. And this actually is the one feature of iCal that I think isn't accessible anymore. It used to work great. I used to love it. And so it doesn't work anymore, is the mini-month view. There's a mini-month thing where you can quickly move the calendar to a specific date without typing the date. And I used to love that feature, and that doesn't work anymore. And I suspect he got stuck there, perhaps. I'm looking at iCal now, and I'm not making it say December 2000 or whatever that date was, he said.
I think in Leopard, I could be wrong on this because I don't remember the mini month thing, but I think that's sort of been replaced with the iCal widget where you can see the month views, and that is completely accessible. So, you know, where you're looking up a particular what day a particular date falls on and that sort of thing. Is that what the mini month was? I don't remember what the mini month view was.
Well, it moved the calendar. So if we agreed that we're going to meet again in 6 days, and I don't even know what day today is anymore, so I could interact with that. And yes, you'd have to interact with it. The mini month, and I could just arrow up 6 times on the date field, and then it would say, you know, whatever is days from now
is the mini month view though even part of iCal in Leopard?
Yes,
it is still there.
Yeah, I've made it do that. So, you know, the December 2000 whatever. So
I've never used iCal, so I'm not participating.
Yeah, I use address book. I really had a great. I love address book.
I do too.
You know, like Steve. I mean, I have lots of and Josh. I have lots of contacts and. You know, it's can go between and edit and, you know, anything with, you know, V cards, it's fine. Yeah.
And if you show mini months under view, it does in fact say December 31st, 2000. So that's
what he did.
Mystery solved.
And VoiceOver does not work with it. He's absolutely right.
Yeah, in that regard.
So let me shut that back off.
Sounds like Minnie Mouse or Minnie Me.
But the iCal as a whole is fine. So,
yeah,
I really take issue with the is completely inaccessible.
Yeah, exactly. It's one thing to say I don't know what to do. It's another thing to say it's not accessible and it's not working correctly. You know, it's just there's
that's a big blanket statement there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
All right.
There are things I'd like to see it do better. Mm-hmm. It doesn't fuss.
Which is valid. That's fine.
Yeah, if you have two overlapping appointments, it doesn't warn you. When you read the calendar, it will show you that, but I don't even know if it does this visually. It would be nice for it to fuss if I tried to schedule over something that I've already scheduled. I want it to let me do it, but I want to know that I'm doing it, maybe.
Like bring up some sort of dialogue or something?
Just like a warning saying, yeah. You know, you currently are. But these are would be nice to have sorts of things. I've survived just fine without it. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the, if you think about how a sighted person would do this, if I'm going to schedule a client on Friday at 2 p.m., the first thing I'll do is I'll look at my calendar on Friday and see if I, in fact, have time available at 2 p.m. If I do, I'll schedule it. What a lot of Windows users do is they'll start right off with making the new appointment, and as they do that, it'll say that there's a conflict, so that you're not looking at the calendar first. And so I think that's just a different way of doing it. So I'd like to have it, but as long as I look at the day before I start scheduling the appointment, which is how everyone does it normally anyway, then there's no issue with it.
Right. Okay.
I manage three calendars for an inaccessible program. I'm managing three calendars with iCal. Completely inaccessible. I have my work calendar, which is on some days very, very full. I have my wife's / family calendar, where she puts all the kids' events and where they're going to be and so forth, and the games, and who has Girl Scouts, and what days I have to make sure I'm home to get them off the bus, and doctor's appointments, and I don't know, she's, I think, busier than I am. And then I've got another calendar with various things that aren't work-related, aren't family-related, but things I need to keep track of and so forth. And so I'm managing three calendars successfully with this very inaccessible program. So I guess I take issue as well. It's could be better, but it's very accessible.
I don't think any of us are saying and want to say that VoiceOver is perfect and the apps are perfect. I mean, there's always room for improvement. There's no denying that. But
that's true for any piece of technology exactly. For anyone.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I actually do want to say VoiceOver is perfect and that all the apps are perfect.
Okay, well.
Hey, email Kara. Cool. Thanks for letting me. Thanks for letting me say that. So.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this review was basically the reverse of that, though.
Absolutely.
Is at completely imperfect, and all of the apps don't work.
All right. Well, let's do this. So I'm pretty sure now. I've said this about three times now. Yeah, maybe just going to be done. But
bad to get it right eventually.
I think the summary's coming up, and then there's a little bit of a, I don't know if what you'd call it afterwards, a little disclaimer sort of thing or whatever. But let's do the summary first, and then we'll. If there's anything new, we can talk about that.
Summary: the Apple VoiceOver screen access software does allow blind users to access most applications that ship with the Macintosh OS X Leopard. Unfortunately, doing so is extremely keystroke intensive. Calendaring is impossible with VoiceOver because nothing is spoken automatically. The interact process is both inconsistent and foreign to screen access software users. It also adds many more keystrokes to an already keystroke intensive screen reading experience. Browsing the internet and using Mac help are two of the most cumbersome tasks in VoiceOver, because VoiceOver does not begin to read automatically, and even after interacting with the HTML content area, one must continuously VO+right arrow to read even the shortest text between links. Last and most important, the training materials provided for VoiceOver should be modified. Background in using OS X is not provided, and settings that make VoiceOver behave better with applications are not provided anywhere. Though we liked the fact that the tutorial for VoiceOver is tightly integrated into the operating system and easy to invoke, we wish it provided more tips on using OS X with VoiceOver as opposed to just highlighting VoiceOver commands and not relating them to the operating system. As tasks are undertaken, the screen access software should speak automatically. Examples of this are the newly loaded page in Safari and progress messages while the system is working on long tasks.
Okay, first off, is calendaring a word? I don't know if I've ever heard calendaring before.
I haven't.
I'm not sure.
I haven't.
But strange anyway, word, anyway.
Anyway, it's impossible. So I don't know how you go, what you guys are talking about.
Yeah, well, yeah, Steve, I'm really impressed.
Yeah, definitely.
Steve, you accomplished the impossible.
I did.
Yeah.
In a calendar.
It's amazing. Three times over.
Yeah. So
and now what are you going to do? Yeah. Schedule some time to go to Disneyland.
Disneyland, exactly.
And just like the arrogance of that, this is what should happen, and VoiceOver should do this, and this is what we say. I mean,
I don't want my screen reader to read everything all
absolutely.
The time automatically.
No, yeah. Totally.
Negative.
And people. All right, so here.
Let but me just, Josh, you're blind. You should.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently
let's,
I should.
Let's just hear the last little bit here and put this thing to bed.
Though this report is based on macOS X 10.5 Leopard, Apple is set to release a new operating system called Snow Leopard sometime this year. Because VoiceOver is a part of the operating system, changes will no doubt be made. We will have to analyze these tasks, and the new operating system, its features, and any changes to VoiceOver to evaluate their completion. Ann Taylor, the National Federation of the Blind Jernigan Institute's Director of Access Technology says, though we appreciate the fact that Apple has included the VoiceOver screen access software as a part of the macOS operating system, we cannot at present recommend it as a productivity tool for the blind. We cannot recommend any tool, even if it is free, if it hampers the productivity of the blind user.
Hampers the productivity?
Oh, wow.
That's a pretty serious statement.
That, yeah. I mean, not only is it... It's not only is it not efficient, but it makes things work. Like, I'm at a loss.
Yeah, you know, I don't even know what to say with that because it's like implying that VoiceOver actually makes it harder for us to use the computer than if there was no VoiceOver at all.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a very strange.
Why do they not get blind people to blind people? I'm tired. How come they didn't get a blind Mac person user to write this article?
Well, because I think it would be too positive at that point.
Yeah.
Maybe. Well, I got a Windows person to be negative.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even kidding when I say that. I do think it would be too positive for the spin they want to put on the article. It seems.
They have their staff. And I totally think this is sloppy journalism, poorly researched, and obviously just an overall... It's not a review. It's a comparison, more or less, and not even good at that. But I think...
But it's almost a slap in the face to those of us who are using it on a daily basis.
It is, and totally disregards the
work that people put into
it. It disregards what we're saying. It's almost saying we don't know what we're talking about. And that's what really annoys me and makes me feel defensive about this article, is that implication that, well, these people who are using it on a daily are not productive computer users.
We're superheroes because we keep accomplishing the impossible.
Well, absolutely.
If you just read this article... and you never had heard of the Mac before, you would think, nobody's using that. And why would they? It sounds impossible.
Impossible is used several times throughout the article.
Yep.
That's true. Yeah. But, I mean, there's a thriving community, but you'd never know it from this.
Right. All right. So I guess what we'll do is we will go around and... do any final thoughts, because I don't know how long this thing is, but we got to wrap this thing up. But,
4 hours.
All right. Probably. All right, so, Holly, anything further?
Well, I guess I just... my name is Holly, and I'm a Mac user.
Hi.
Bravo.
I mean, I think the implications in this article are just beyond... Some of them are... I mean, you know, I think we pointed out that some of them are legitimate, but most of them are just beyond ridiculous. And I can't believe this was actually published in, like, a major magazine, so...
Right. Josh?
Well, there's a lot of things I'd like to say, some of which are probably unwise.
Yeah, I don't have an explicit tag in the iTunes store.
So. There you go. Basically, what it boils down to is this is the same thing that we see over and over and over again, I think, since VoiceOver was released with Tiger. We saw it with AFB, we've seen it with ACB, now we're seeing it with NFB, and I think NFB has been in and out of over the last several years as well. These blindness organizations and anyone else practically that wants to write these kinds of things, they do have agendas, like it or not, and I think we do see a lot of that in all of these reviews, and unfortunately the primary result over the last few years is the spreading of, you know, misinformation, disinformation, however you want to look at that. I think it's why we have a lot of these resources now. You know, we've got Mac Visionaries, we've got Mac VoiceOver, we've got Screenless Switchers, we've got LionCord.com. you know, we've all kind of contributed over the last few years to set the record straight. And I mean, I think the biggest issue is as long as Apple continues to do this the way that they've been doing it, which is basically they've treated Access as a given. VoiceOver should be part of the operating system. Visually impaired people should be able to use the operating system effectively, and treat it as just another part of the OS. The blindness organizations have nothing to gain by recommending it. They have nothing to gain by reviewing it fairly. And they have everything to continue to gain by doing the opposite. And I don't see that that changing anytime soon, unfortunately, until the numbers of Mac users, and I think we are heading in this direction, the numbers of blind Mac users, visually impaired Mac users, is just so overwhelming that they can't do it anymore. And I think it's gradually getting to that point. Until then, we're going to sadly see these kinds of things. And I should also point out, Apple is certainly not alone in this predicament. You've got, in the past, WindowEyes faced a similar sort of uphill struggle because JAWS was the de facto standard. JAWS was the one that everybody sang praises to and, worshipped on the Henry Joyce altar. Eventually change for them, but I think they were in a similar, not nearly as bad as I think Apple is, but I think they were in a similar position not all that long ago as well. It's sort of the nature of the industry, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you bring up an interesting point talking about how all these things have sprung up, the different communities of blind Mac users. I know Holly and I, I had been on Mac Visionaries long before I had a Mac, and when that first Access World article came out, even just from lurking on the Mac Visionaries list, there were things that I knew were wrong. And when Holly and I decided to get Macs, we were like, okay, we need to do a podcast to chronicle our experience because it's going to be better than what we're hearing. And so I'm sure, not to speak for you, but I'm sure you probably had a similar thing. Like, I need to get information out there to people.
Yeah, accurate information. Exactly. I mean, that's the biggest thing. These articles are from people who aren't really using the system, that don't really care to truly learn how to use it, and have absolutely no idea what they're doing.
Right. All right. Kara, final thoughts?
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you're listening to this and you're curious, try it for yourself. Go to an Apple store, play with it. Play with a friend, see what you can do. Don't listen to us, don't listen to them. Just it really shouldn't be an us and them situation. Just get to one and play with it yourself. See what you think. And have an eye for trying new things. Come at it with a fervor like that. See what you can do.
Exactly. That's a really good point. People really should draw their own conclusions. Not from us, not from the people who write the articles that we just talked about. Draw your own conclusions. And finally, Steve, final thoughts?
Yeah. I think as I've listened to people talking and have read this article a few times through now, the one thing that becomes apparent to me is what Kara said, that you have to be open-minded. You have to she didn't say this, but you have to assume that things are not going to be the same. If you're buying a new type of computer with a new type of operating system, things are going to be different. That having been said, I think there is some validity possibly to the idea that documentation should be developed, and I don't think Apple should have to do this, but third-party documentation should be developed for Windows people who are migrating to the Mac to ease those sorts of things specifically for people who are expecting or are used to things behaving in a certain manner, that may be open-minded but may be overwhelmed with a lot of the ways that things are done on the Mac simply because they don't understand it. Some of this documentation already exists, but it is a bit scattered. I don't think it's Apple's responsibility to do it. I mean, if I were switching to Windows from the Mac, certainly there's no documentation telling me what I need to know. Same with Linux. I think, though, that the documentation does exist for, in those two scenarios, albeit from third parties, and there really should exist documentation for this type of scenario. Were such documentation in existence, and if the reviewer had access to it, I think this review might have turned out a little bit differently. The argument could, of course, be made that the documentation wouldn't be bundled, as well it shouldn't be. But I think a big part of this is just the lack of understanding, and that's something that could be addressed. So maybe some good will come out of this review. I'm planning on writing a rebuttal for next month's Monitor. I don't know that it'll get published, but I'll certainly push hard to make it get published. But also, maybe a group should be convened to write some documentation. And honestly, I wouldn't even mind having the reviewer as part of that group to say, this doesn't work because it's totally inaccessible. Because if he's seeing that, maybe someone else out there is as well. And we need to look at it from that perspective to be able to say, this is why he's saying this. And from there, we can develop documentation to address it so that the next time this happens, it won't be blatantly dismissed as a solution that is not productive. So, I don't know. I think it's a shame. I think it's a very poor review. I think it was very poorly researched. But at the same time, and this is hard for me because I'm normally a pessimist by nature, or at least a skeptic, I see the possibility of some positive change, that they've laid their cards on the table, right, wrong, or differently, and I think that can be worked with through documentation and whatever. So I'm planning to call him up tomorrow, see if he'll be part of that team. It'll be an interesting response, which I will be glad to put in my rebuttal for next month.
Awesome, and that's a great way of thinking. You know, we as Mac users need to kind of work with those people, extend the olive branch, as it were, and you know, it's
I think too, those people have to be willing to work with us as well. Like, they have to be, and that's, we've talked about that lots. So
and see that, and that's where my skepticism comes in. I don't see that it from the tone of the review. Maybe he it would be that way. But the way this review is written, the impression I come away with is I don't want to be bothered learning how to use this, and nothing you say can convince me this is a good solution. That's the impression I get from the way this was written, mm-hmm. personally. That's the way it sounds, which I think is even worse with all of the things that were said about the AFB article back in 2005 and the inaccuracies that was in, that entailed. I think this one was actually you know, a lot more negatively written, I think.
I think I definitely share your cynicism, Josh, but I will say that I will be very happy to be proven wrong, and I'll be happy to it.
Yeah, I absolutely will as well. All right, I would love to be proven wrong.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this monstrous podcast. I hope all of you listening are still with us, or some of you are. Let's wrap this up really quick. I'm Darcy Bernard. You can find the podcast that Holly and I do at darcyandholly.com, screenthiswitchers.com, and follow Twitter, DHS Darcy. Holly, your Twitter thing?
And DHS Holly for my Twitter.
All right, Josh, your contact info?
You can find me at lioncourt.com for Mac accessibility, or you can follow me on Twitter. Personally, I'm lioncourt on Twitter, lioncourt, and Mac accessibility for Mac accessibility news on Twitter.
All right, Steve, your contact info?
I am Steve Sawson, findable at steve at maine.com. Stands for atmaine.com. On the mailing lists, people may see me as steve@sawson.com, my last name, which is confusing to spell. On Twitter, I'm Steve of Maine, and I called by phone, if anyone still uses that anymore, 207-512-2387.
A daring soul.
Yeah.
I'm Kara Quinn, and you can visit www.karaquinn.com or www.onemodelplace.com/Kara Quinn, and that's onemodelplace. Email is karaquinn@karaquinn.com, and then Twitter is Model Kara.
All right, awesome. Well, I want to thank all of you for listening. I definitely want to thank everybody who was on the Screen the Searchers today. We got off to a really late start, thanks to some issues, due to some issues on my part, and obviously we took a really long time, so I definitely appreciate everyone here. And we will be back with another Screen the Switchers sometime in the not-too-distant future. Take care, everyone.
You've been listening to the Screen the Switchers podcast. Check us out on the web at www.screentheswitchers.com.
Send us an email at show@screentheswitchers.com.
You can call us at 206-203-0902.
Music for the Screen the Switchers podcast provided by Travis Hoffman. Check out his website at www.travishoffman.com.